It's time for Twink This Week in Google. Stacey and Jeff are both here. We're going to talk about the latest news from Google. There's somebody wants to have nationalize Google, Facebook, and Amazon. I can't wait to see what Jeff has to say about that. Google's got a plan for the EU. Maybe they're trying to avoid that multi-billion dollar fine. And the Essential Phone. What the hell's going on over there? It's time for Twig. Next.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for This Week in Google is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. This is Twig, This Week in Google, episode 420, recorded Wednesday, August 30th, 2017. Low Irish talking. It's time for Twig, This Week in Google. Holy cow, it's the idiocy show, and I'm not talking about our great hosts. Just the stuff they're going to talk about later today. Jeff Jarvis is saying idiocy, idiocy, idiocy. Jeff Jarvis.
Stupidity! I've had it with stupidity!
I love Jeff. Jeff is a professor of journalism at CUNY, the City University of New York. He's also a blogger at BuzzMachine.com, has written many a great book, including What Would Google Do?, Public Parts. Great to have you back, Jeff. I guess
wonderful
you were here.
To have
I'm
you
back.
Back, too. Yeah, you're the one who's back.
I wasn't here. I was at the podcast movement, which is a terrible name for an expo.
I agree.
Yeah, I had a bowel expo this morning.
Did you pass the podcast?
Yeah. I passed the podcast.
Oh, no.
Stacey Higginbotham's wondering what she's doing with these crude boys. Stacey is,
indeed.
Stacey on IoT.com is her newsletter, IoTpodcast.com, the podcast she does about Internet of Things with Kevin Toefel. And also, oddly enough, a regular on this show. Your husband was at the podcast movement, though.
He was.
Did he have a good time?
He had lots of fun. Yes, and he tried to hang out with you, Leo, but people pass like ships in the night.
You sent me a note, and I, of course, like all email, I read it and then forgot about it. But I forgot to put his number in my phone, and I could have texted
him.
We were really kind of.
Lisa said you guys arrived like super late too.
So. Yeah, the plane was late, so we missed the Hall of Fame awards, and then it was meetings all day because we were there really to meet with agencies and advertisers and stuff like that. It was fun, though. I'm glad to see. I can report that podcasting is vital and alive, and there's a lot of great stuff going on. A lot of people were new to it. In fact, it was kind of fun for me to go to a podcast expo and not be recognized, which means it's not the old timers. It's these new people, which is fantastic.
How big is it?
It's not huge. I mean, it's a tiny little conference. I don't know how many people were there. Maybe 1,000. And the booths all fit in a hotel ballroom, so it's not giant.
Next week, I get to go to the Now Hear This Podcast Festival in New York.
That's going to be a lot of big shows there, too. Is it WNYC?
Like so
or who's doing
I bought the three-day ticket.
Yeah, I'm a little jealous.
Super jealous.
September 8th through 10th, you get to see live performances of comedy Bang Bang and Planet Money and Larry Wilmore, LeVar Burton. John Lovett and Friends, Love It or Leave It, Lore, Criminal. So you're going to go see all those shows?
No, I'll go to some.
I want to get a sense of the place
and the people.
As somebody who's a regular on podcasts, you'd probably look at this and go, geez, who would want to sit and watch podcasts?
Who would want to sit and watch people like us talk?
I know. But there are a lot of celebrities. I mean, you've got Lauren Lapkus. You've got LeVar Burton. This is John Lovett.
Larry Wilmore.
These are big name. A lot of comedy.
Yeah.
Well, that's got to get more comedy audience, seemed to be that was always the intro to podcasts, right? I always associate it with tech and comedy.
Yeah, tech first, comedy came later, but a lot of comedians who were not working ended up podcasting.
Why not do a podcast?
And frankly,
as a journalist, I endorse that.
It worked really well. And look at Marc Maron, career's taken off. In fact, he's great in the new Netflix original Glow. Highly recommend him in that.
It's amazing. So there's a couple of things on the rundown. Speaking of new kinds of content, one is I'm about to finish listening to John Ronson's Butterfly Effect.
I just downloaded that. Tell me about that.
It's an Amazon. It's Audible. I think 6-part podcasty thing.
It's free for Audible members.
It's free for Audible members right now. So, and I recommend it highly. John Ronson, who wrote the Shaming book, he starts with a single event. A guy named Fabian who's thought that, hey, why isn't porn free on the internet? And then Ronson looks at the butterfly effect of all of those things. And it is fascinating, well-reported, quite amazing. I'll give you one example. Don't worry. So he sees all the effects of the free porn and what that does to the industry. He then goes to San Fernando Valley and talks to producers and directors and talent. And he asks somebody there. He said, I recognize these women are just get all kinds of work, and then they're gone. And then they're kind of back later. What happened? Well, it turns out that in porn, you have to be either young enough to play a teenager or old enough to play a MILF. Pardon me for that. And in the middle, there's no work in porn as we would now see it. So there's a new industry that started in custom porn. Did you know that?
Yeah, I did know that.
I had no idea.
It's a big industry because people will pay to get stuff made to their particular weird fetish.
Poor Stacey. Looking aside. Well, so the one that fascinated Ronson was a guy who said, I want you to take my stamp collection. I've been collecting for 30 years, and I want three naked women to destroy it and burn it and then mock the guy who's playing basically him, the owner of the stamp collection.
Strange.
Kind of stuff.
Humans will never cease to amaze. Oh, so is this produced? Stuff. So there's a new style of show, which is not what we do, which is the NPR style. But it's produced in that where you go,
exactly.
Joey liked his stamp collection. And then there's music. But Joey didn't know. Let me just play a little bit and just see. Can you get my, are you hearing my audio?
But when you least expect them. This story started for me when I happened to see a man glance. As a woman.
It's totally that style.
Nobody's
oh
exactly
my
style
freaking
music
God.
Comes in.
But by chance.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
So then the other thing, the other new thing
I'm
is
start our
Facebook
shows
Watch.
Like that.
I think you should. Do the,
he was
the voice, Leo.
Jeff Jarvis was a journalism professor. One day, when walking to his office, he noticed something odd. Stacey Higginbotham. And I don't know, but I just, it's funny because
it's basically a book.
And then
for dummies who don't read,
their
right?
eyes met. And this is what happened next.
Wait, are you shipping Jeff Jarvis and I? Because that's not cool.
I think it started with, I'm almost certain it's Ira Glass and This American Life that created.
I thought it was like the BBC, because the BBC does these highly produced radio dramas that these kind of
I love
mimic.
Their stuff. I really love their stuff. But listen to, I'll just play at completely random, This American Life.
It sounds exactly
audio,
the same.
And just listen how it begins.
Paul's a cop in New York. Paul Bacon. Officer Bacon. No jokes, please. And one night, he did his regular 4 to midnight shift. And then he was told that they needed him to cover a second shift in another part of the city, in a little security booth, in an area they were protecting from terrorists, basically. At 2 a.m., the other officer who's working in this booth with him takes a lunch break, goes and takes a nap. And then at 3 a.m., it's Paul's turn for a break. He's exhausted. Remember, he had already worked
a
full
shift. And I should point
out
Ira Glass, who has this great, kind of New York sound, says that the beats are 40 seconds. So we're at 30 seconds in. I'm predicting in 10 seconds there'll be some music.
And he decides that he's also going to take a nap.
There'll be a payoff.
So he gets into his patrol car and he drives it out into this
there you
park,
go. 38
a
seconds.
Little ways away from the security booth.
I've never heard this
my
before.
Car in the one available spot, thinking there's no. This
and then,
is
oh yeah, then you do sound.
That's a real sound.
Then you do sound. I could. It's a formula. I don't mind it. In fact, this I considered for years This American Life to be the best radio show ever done. But it's a radio show created for public radio, and podcasts don't have to sound like public radio shows. I'm just saying.
Exactly. Amen. Which is part of the podcast festival, I think. If the non-comedy ones, they overproduce it. And
this is
it's
a debate.
Very good. Very good.
I think there's room for both. What's the debate?
Yeah.
Do you? Well, I'm worried because I get a lot of people who are like, Stacey, you should produce your show more. And I'm like, it's just Kevin and I talking about stuff. I don't tell them to listen to this show because it's even worse.
We're not storytellers. We're conversationalists in this world.
The irony is I have enough staff that I could easily do that.
Oh, yeah.
But from day one, I decided that we would want to sound informal and live. In fact, to do it live. Here, let's listen to Stacey's. I like the music, Stacey. Better than ours.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to the Internet of Things podcast. This is your host, Stacey Higginbotham, and your co-host,
Kevin Toefel.
Sounds just like
us. And we have a jam-packed show.
Yeah, and by the way, Stacey, like you, Leo, has the smiley voice. I have the growly voice. You two have the smiley voice.
You're the mustard to our mayonnaise.
Yes.
That's
another
mustard
thing I learned from Ronson's thing. In the custom porn, there's a condiment fetish. I'll leave it there.
Okay, guys, we don't need to talk about custom porn anymore.
No more, but I tried to distract him, but I couldn't.
Right. So the other thing I found interesting was, have you watched Facebook Watch?
No, what's that?
Television on Facebook?
Facebook is shifting to episodic serial video, loyalty video, which makes me really interested, Leo, in your reaction as to whether or not you would produce something 10-minute length a week or a day for Facebook with revenue coming from Facebook.
Well, given the amount of money they're spending...
Well, they started producing stuff.
Here's their promo. This is discover new shows to enjoy with friends and other fans. Introducing Watch. So they show it on a phone, which is telling because they clearly expect this to be.
Well, I couldn't find it on a phone. This is what disturbed me. I could not find it. They're rolling that out. But if you go to your web version of Facebook.
Well, this is just going to be music with pictures.
Yes. It's
talk about underproduced. All right.
I run. So okay. If you on the rundown, where did I put it? I put an example of a video. But if you go to your own Facebook page.
Okay.
On the left.
Okay.
Leo page, right?
Yeah.
No,
yeah.
I'm sorry. The homepage.
Homepage. Yeah. Okay.
On the left, there it is. Watch.
They gave it pride of place there. I get news feed. Number three is Watch. So these are original programs. Oh, look,
right.
Loosely Exactly Nicole, Season 1, Episode 1, Babysitting, 19 minutes and 47 seconds. Mature content.
That's long.
It's okay so far.
Yeah, it's not exactly short form.
Didn't the weatherman say it was going to be 72?
That's the length of a sitcom. A sitcom's 22 minutes.
This is Van Nuys. They don't call it the devil's taint for nothing.
You think God's
this actually looks a lot of... That's disgusting. This
one right up there, I want my phone back.
Yeah.
Do that one.
All right.
Do that one.
This looks a lot like sitcoms. Like sitcom pilots, right?
This is a game
show.
This
is a terrible idea.
Let's do this.
This is such a bad idea.
Your hand is literally on the trigger.
I know, right?
They're on the street playing a game.
Phones have been around for a long
time. The deal is she's going to offer, you can fast forward, she's going to offer them money to do something embarrassing with their phone.
Be my guest. This is what I want to send to your friend, Kevin. Hey, I'm going to this wedding in Australia in October. Would you want to be my date? I can't pay for all of it, but I can chip in. Need to know today.
Send it.
Yes!
Oh, my God. Oh, God, did you really send it?
Well, yeah, you literally just said send it.
Okay, so that's interesting.
Game showy.
Yeah, and I have to say, it probably speaks more to the phone generation. Like, they would kind of get into this, the whole idea of sending texts. She's great. You know, she's the host. I think she's got some good energy.
Energy.
Is it all on the? It's all on the phone. It's all on the phone.
That show.
Yeah.
Yes. They take your phone from you. They plug it into the screen. They find something embarrassing, and then they say, "Are you willing for me to, you know, put this on Facebook or tweet this to this person?"
That's the whole game.
And then they eliminate people one by one until there's a winner.
And you're eliminated based on how far you're willing to go.
Exactly.
How much of your dignity you're willing to put on the line?
Yeah, exactly.
Let's try another one here real quick.
I want to keep your phone for 24 hours so I can resolve all of this Kevin wedding
drama. Listen to the music.
What do you say? $100, keep your phone for just 24 hours.
Hell
I can do
no.
whatever I want on it.
And by the way, that music is totally stolen from traditional game show production, like, Dealer, whatever the question one is, and... I can't even remember the names of these.
Even my heart was racing as I heard it. Like, ba-dum, ba-dum, ba-dum.
What's gonna happen? But it's totally manufactured because there really isn't that much drama, really. Can I keep your phone for $100 for 24 hours? What do you think?
We'll return to you at this same time tomorrow.
Really? I mean, is this that dramatic? Ta-dum, ta-dum, ba-dum, ba-dum.
$100.
Are you out of your mind?
Are you into yours? Let's do this.
Nah, I want my phone back. I'm sorry. Whoa! I almost made it all the way, but now I got
$300.
The no, final still offer. No.
$500. Okay. Oh, they're sitting
on studio audience of two. Do nothing but applaud.
This is like the chairs we make our studio audience.
So here's the question, Leo.
This appeals to, it's obviously aimed at millennials, and it's what I like, you know, it's low cost.
I don't think it's even millennials. I think that is
teenagers.
Like
teenagers. It's 17-year-olds, maybe.
But that's not all of it. There's other things there, too. I think
VR blind date in outer space.
There's lots of other shows.
Stacking. Let's see what stacking is.
This is weird.
Okay, something's emerging.
It's like the beginning of Gumby. There used to be a show that did that.
Yeah, you know what they're doing? There's this reverse video of a Jenga tower and of crayons melting. So they're melting.
They're perilous heights.
Oh, yeah, this is a weird thing they do in Europe. You've seen this, Jeff, where they...
Yeah,
it's a Spanish thing.
Well, this is a whole show where they look at things in disorder, melting and collapsing. I can't imagine anything more boring.
That's very YouTube-y. But it's too long for that. I mean, this... Well, it's
not like those people... The whispering people on YouTube. Oh, my God. What are they called?
The whispering?
The crackly whisper people. There's a whole YouTube subculture. I just learned about it from my friend in Seattle.
ASMR.
Thank you. ASMR.
What is it called again?
ASMR.
ASMR.
Wait a minute, we're going to play a little bit of it. Gentle whispering.
Oh, right. Yes.
Oh,
yes,
right? Yes. You know about this?
Yes, I do.
There was actually an article about it just like as soon as I found out about it, Fast Company wrote it.
Incredibly irritating.
ASMR, the internet subculture of sounds that feel good, is going mainstream. Okay,
I'm ready to scream, of course.
That you experience when you hear unique soft.
What the hell? So, okay, Jeff, this is exactly like custom porn. This just shows it's not sexual, but it just shows this is the beauty of YouTube. With 100,000 hours a day of new content, anything can be served, including people.
And not just that, Leo. The other thing I realized about custom porn is that we already know there's custom content, custom advertising, or the custom porn. Now anybody with money can make content. The skill of making content is completely commodified. Completely.
So
there's nothing special about making content anymore. So nothing.
This is a famous woman.
Irritating thing in life. She is.
You have to turn it up if you want to hear it because it's very low. Can I do it?
Can I? Talking like that?
I can do it. Does it have to be an attractive young woman or can an old man do it?
I don't know if you do old men ASMR. I shudder to think what you might find.
What? I don't understand the appeal at all.
So there are people who feel that the sound of like fingers on a blanket or crinkling paper and whispering.
Oh, here's one.
It's all very relaxing.
Here's relaxing, fluffy towel folds.
Hello. Today I wanted to show you another tutorial on how to fold towels in very decorative way.
Oh my God! I would swear to God, I would have thought this is like Saturday Night Live or I'm going crazy. One or the other. That's
so
real.
So that's how I felt when I found out about this. But IKEA did a 30-minute or maybe it was 25-minute ad based on this, and it's this woman, and she rubs her hands
really?
Over.
Oh my!
Do another home decor tutorial. In this video,
just IKEA.
I'm gonna concentrate on relaxing you as well as the show.
I don't find her voice that relaxing. See if
I find it so irritating. I want to scream.
If I did this, would you find this relaxing?
So, Leo, should I talk like
it's
this?
It's too high.
Oh. No, all of you just, you must stop.
Where we could do this
welcome
together, it would make me seem so much calmer.
I'd like
than
you to
usual.
Welcome us, everybody, to another edition of This Week in Low Talking. Oh. Twizzle.
So, all right. Go ahead, Stacey. Try it.
No. I can't do it. Yeah, I can't do it.
Go ahead,
Stacey. You're too stressed out. Just relax.
I have been silenced all my life. I cannot let this silence me.
Karsten, can you do it to her voice?
It's taking control.
Can you turn Stacey
it's
down?
Taking control of it.
Make her call.
Making it okay. You're owning your own, Stacey. You're owning it.
I'll crinkle the paper.
Only somebody.
There we are.
Only somebody.
There's quiet. Crinkly Stacey.
With real power.
Stacey's gone crinkly.
Can talk like that.
Soft.
Now, I'm told if I did it in an Irish accent, it would be even better. So if I talked like this in a very soothing way, I'd like to welcome you to This Week in Low Irish Talking. Twillet. Today we're going to talk about the sound of shamrocks when the wind rustles through them on a beautiful...
Leo, I have an idea.
What?
Let's counter this with the shouting show! Let's shout everything we say!
Okay,
I think you've lost your entire audience.
To get back... I know, everybody said, can we fast forward? I could do it all like Herbert the Pervert. Come on in. I'd like to show you something in my basement. So what it's interesting for Stacey, Stacey's got a migraine coming on this big, I can tell.
Where is my alcohol? I only have coffee today.
You should always have wine for this show. I'm just saying.
This is a tequila day.
But it shows, that's why I don't celebrate this NPR style podcast, because it's so formulaic. Mm-hmm. There's so many things you could do, and it'd be silly to copy what we do too. I mean, I'm copying kind of the McLaughlin Group roundtable style news show, I guess, would be the closest analog to what we do. And I always, every time I've, talked about doing a show, it's always been like this because I like the dialogue. I like the kind of conversation. Could you get me a nice soothing lamp? We could turn the lights down a little bit.
How about
that's for later, Leo.
Help Helen Smash.
Helen Smash?
Under new this week. I'm sure you'll find it there.
I guess to get back to your original point, I do see Facebook, YouTube, Apple, all looking with envy over the fence at Netflix and HBO and saying, and by the way, the reason HBO does it is different than why Netflix does it, is different than why Apple does it, is different than why Audible does it. They're not all the same goals. Apple really doesn't care so much about... They want to generate traffic for Apple Music, which helps sell hardware. Netflix is dying on the vine, or was, because they can't get Hollywood to give them new movies, so they had to make original content. That worked really well. HBO's always... HBO started with movies, right? But they couldn't get the great movies.
With movies, right. And
their first
movies...
Home box office, remember?
Watch movies at home. I got in all kinds of trouble... with the then CEO of Facebook, because I was at People Magazine reviewing them, and the first movies were nothing but an excuse to say, hey, we're cable, we can show naked breasts.
Right.
And they were ridiculously stupid movies.
That's how HBO started.
It was crap.
It's pretty funny because that's what Game of Thrones did. Every HBO show in the first, at least pilot, has nudity, has sexuality. As if they don't trust that anybody's going to...
Rage, they dropped it, yeah.
Yeah, and then in this season, we saw Jon Snow's butt, but there was no other nudity, and I thought it was great. And finally, it's like, let's get rid of this softcore porn that feels like HBO feels like they have to do it.
So here's my question for you, Leo. So there are other things here. Young Turks is here.
That's a great show. That's
Jimmy
kind
Kimmel's
of odd
here.
Because the Young Turks looks like a television news show, doesn't it? It's kind of interesting.
Lots of different things are here, right? Lots of different stuff, including major media stuff is here. Would you at Twitch, they say the best length is somewhere between 2 and 10 minutes, but you have anywhere from 2 to 2 hours you could do.
We do short form. We do short form for the
Echo. Would you produce a show for this?
Yeah, for enough money.
Money, yeah.
We do stuff for the Echo that we take.
Right.
What we do is we take our, like for this show and others, and we just take a good little section of something and... 3 or 4 minutes and put it on the Amazon.
Madge, my echo is broken. I can't hear it. These voices are really soft.
Talk to you now on your echo about very quiet stuff.
I am going to regret ever introducing you to this particular internet subculture.
I've never heard of this. Did your daughter teach you this, or did you? How did you find out about this?
My friend is a therapist in Seattle, and so a lot of her, she is apparently very in tune with this because some of her clients use this. It's apparently a big deal for people who are anxiety.
So there's a
Oh, it makes me so anxious.
So there's a serious thing.
It makes me anxious as hell.
In therapy, it's autonomous sensory meridian response.
Well, so it's not actually, okay, people are going to come after me, I think, but this is not a legit diagnosis. This was actually part of the dinner conversation that not me, but some of her therapist friends were having. Is this a real diagnosis? No, it's not. It's just an internet diagnosis.
No, and I wouldn't call this a diagnosis, but there are people who find it relaxed. Well, you know, when you, I used to do this with my kids all the time. They called it chills. I draw pictures on their back with the tips of my fingers. I'm sure you did this to your daughter. Mm-hmm. That's one of the things that they do in this. Whispering, soft talking, light touches, methodical sounds. But I don't think this is just if you feel good when you're getting a massage. I get a massage every week for that reason, right? Or getting a haircut. You know that great feeling when somebody's kind of playing with your hair? Just gently?
I think we're on the verge of learning too much.
Or Bob. Ahead. Well, you don't. Come on, Jeff. I know you're grumpy, but surely you know what I'm talking about.
Oh, that irritates the hell out of me.
Don't have ASMR.
I am one of those people who like light touches. I'm like, oh, don't touch me.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, I do that. So see, maybe it's a thing.
I love it.
I think so. Washington Post had a very long piece today about mindfulness and arguing that it's an okay concept that's been completely ruined with marketing and all this junk that goes around it and you know, junk psychology. Fascinating.
Wait, are we talking about Headspace?
I love Headspace. No.
Hey, Google loves mindfulness.
Andy talks like that, right? Andy kind of talks quietly. Bob Ross with his painting programs. That was the whole thing about Bob Ross. You didn't have to want to be a painter to
Stacey, do you know who Bob Ross is?
Sure she does.
Bob Ross was great because he was so forgiving. Okay. He was like, oh, I just smudged this. Don't worry about it. Let's just make some other
happy little trees.
He was Mr. Rogers. Fan brush. Yeah. These fan brushes are marvelous. They'll do wonderful, wonderful things for you. You can paint them.
Oh, God.
So this is fingernails on a chalkboard to you?
Oh, torture. Complete torture.
Just to show you we can.
It's like slow talkers. I can't take slow talkers.
People You're just a New Yorker, Jeff.
He's such a New Yorker. He wants to be... Like so. Jazzed up.
There we are.
Yes! Got a problem with that?
Okay.
Actually, ADD people, I hope I'm not quoting another bogus thing, but I happen to look deeply into this. There's a medical group in Marin County that's functional MRIs. They talk about different kinds of ADD, but essentially attention deficit disorder, which I clearly suffer from, is, oddly enough, a lack of activity in the frontal lobe, a frontal lobe that's way slowed down. I bet you this might be what, Jeff, why you like that stimulus. And so ADD people are constantly trying to stimulate that. That's why they like a lot of things going on at the same time, because they're trying to actually get normal activity in their frontal lobe. Ooh. And I don't think it's a theory, but an accurate theory. I don't think I'm making up some crazy thing when I say that. And that's why a lot of the drugs for ADD, I think all the drugs for childhood ADD are stimulants.
Yes.
Like Adderall, which is methamphetamine, and Ritalin, which is a stimulant, because they're trying to stimulate the frontal lobe. And what I wasn't on drugs as a kid, but I would do things. You do hyper focus is one thing you do, which is you do the opposite. You narrow everything down so you have one stimulant. I used to play chess for that reason. It's just very focused. Or you like to have a lot of things going on at once. And I think it's kind of our kids now have kind of a situational ADD because there's so much stimulus all the time that it almost creates a need for that.
So this is another thing I learned from the Ronson podcast. There's a lot of good reporting in it.
I'm going to listen to this, yeah.
The rate of,
erectile dysfunction or
erectile dysfunction.
ED.
Thank you. So ED, the rate of ED in people under 30 for years in many studies, starting in 48 with Kinsey, was running about 2-3%. Now it's running 26%.
Yeah, because we're overstimulated.
He's overstimulated with porn and other things.
That makes sense.
Fascinating. And so the belief that pregnancies are down, people say, oh, well, good, sex education is working. And the expert Ronson talked to said, no, probably because they can't have sex.
So I understand Facebook wanting to do this. It's just like YouTube. And remember, YouTube spent $100 million and got nothing. They had a Shaquille O'Neal channel and stuff. And all the celebrities they brought to YouTube. And I think YouTube learned the lesson that YouTube star people watch YouTube for a particular kind of unique video that's not like any other kind of media. You can't bring old media to YouTube and make it work. I don't know if Facebook's learned that. This looks a lot like kind of a euthanized network television where they're just, you know, it's still a game show. You're just now in the park.
Yeah.
It's reality show. Those sitcoms look very much like regular sitcoms with younger people in younger situations. But I bet you they're going to find out, just as YouTube did, that you've got to create content that's native to your platform, really.
I think so. Meanwhile, YouTube just put out a redesign today.
What
drives me nuts about YouTube,
I can't tell the difference.
It does. The problem I have with YouTube is always the irony of being part of Google is I can't find out what's going on. I can't search. They're recommending things to me that are 4 years old next to things that are 4 hours old. And no way for me to get in and say, what's going on the YouTube? I can't ever find out because everybody sees a different YouTube, which is purposeful.
Jeff, see this button on the left that says trending?
Trending, I know, but that's as fake as the trending on Facebook.
Yeah, it's probably YouTube. This is what we want you to watch.
Yeah. Surrounded by killer whales.
Yeah, and interesting.
Yeah, I see. So I can't dig in, or if I want to see what is this far right YouTube that's occurring, there's no way for me to dig in and find it. Or my fear, of course, is when I look at one thing.
You can search for it on Google.
That's true.
It would come right up. I found ASMR like that.
Sorry.
So Stacey has come around on Facebook, though, right? First of all, we should mention Stacey's in Austin, but your family's in Houston. Your parents, and they're okay.
I grew up in Houston.
You grew up in Houston.
Everybody send good vibes.
And our own Megan Maroney also grew up in Houston. And she says it's very chilling to look at these videos because she recognizes these streets. Is that the same for you?
So, okay. Yes, it is. And I'll just give you my little Stacey's quick take on all of this, because actually on Monday, I was not doing well. I was shook. My family has lived on the Gulf Coast forever. And when Hurricane Katrina hit in 2005, my extended family lost everything. They were in Biloxi. Like literally their houses were all gone. I think I had one cousin who managed to save their pickup truck. And so that was killer. It was hard to watch. It was hard to recover from. And it took a long time. And what's unfathomable to me is that's happening right now in Houston, over a much longer time frame. What happened with Mississippi, not with New Orleans, but Mississippi after Katrina was, you know, very quick. And now my parents have been holed up in their house, unable to leave.
Oh, dear.
For like 4 days now. Jeez. And it's the water's not going down. And it's hard to see. It's hard to see all of these places that you know and love underwater, but it's also hard to realize that This is not something that's easy to come back from. And it's most of the people who were affected in Biloxi, a lot of them left. And the town is not the same. And I don't know. It is tough. So
I bet Houston's going to come back, Stacey, because New York, Sandy hit us really hard. The aftermath of Sandy is really difficult. I mean, it's worse than the storm. You weather the storm literally, and then my God, the carpet you rip out, and the drywall, and the houses that are gone, and the neighbors who leave, and all that. But then, I think someplace as vibrant as Houston, I'm more worried about the towns that the storm is hitting now than Houston. I think Houston Houston's too. It's what America's fourth largest city. It's got to come back, doesn't it?
It will.
But the
come
cost
back.
Is incredible.
The cost is going to be amazing. There's a couple things. There's a lack of the places that are flooding aren't places that are insured by floods. This is not over. There is still water rising, and it will continue to rise over the next few days. And I think a lot of people will leave. A lot of businesses are going to be affected and shut down. So the poorest people who work in like the service industry at local restaurants and places like that, they're not going to, your job's going to be gone for a long time. And the impact of this, I don't think Sandy is a great, and I'm not saying that Sandy was not catastrophic. I don't know.
This is beyond in so many ways.
Just the types of businesses, the types of people who are affected, but we'll see. And then there's all these tiny towns that are basically like parts of them are just washed away. And that'll be what it is. So we'll see. It's going to take a while.
What
I just put up, there's a great Washington Post column by David Vondrail about the poor and these kinds of events. And he said that he quotes a sports writer from long, many years ago, who said that everyone gets the same amount of ice in life. The rich get theirs in the summer, the poor in the winter.
Yeah.
And talking about how expensive this is proportionally for people's lives if you're poor, and it's going to be awful for those who are rich can afford it, but it's awful beyond belief for the poor, and this is going to hit the poor terribly.
Stacey, what should people do who hear this, your story, and I know it makes me feel very empathetic. What in your experience is useful to do at this point? Donate to the Red Cross? What would you like people to do? At this point, we'd like to do something. What should we do?
There are a lot of good charities. I would also say, this is crazy, but keep some powder dry.
It's going to Louisiana next, by the way.
This may not even be the first big storm, however crazy that would be.
Isn't even the first big storm. This is the third.
Third 500-year storm
in the last few years in Houston. I mean, this is almost a punch after two more punches, and you're right, there may be more to come.
Ike wasn't that bad. Rita was, I feel like Rita ripped a lot of roofs off. Houston's actually accomplished and good with floods, believe it or not. But this is just unprecedented. The hurricane itself was not...
It's the rain.
Right.
It's like Mother Nature learned a new bad trick. It's like it learned social media. You know, let me create a storm that just stays forever. And that can happen anywhere. You know, it's not just southern, Gulf places.
So
it could happen.
The Texas
anywhere.
Tribune, which, by the way, excellent, Jeff. I'm sure you're familiar with the Texas Tribune.
They're the greatest.
Yes. They're a fantastic organization, future of news, but they have a site or they have an article that's actually very good, how to get and offer help after Hurricane Harvey. And things like, I'm a big fan of I use the Central Texas Food Bank, but the Houston Food Bank, there's the Texas Diaper Bank. There's going to be, I mean, if you're inclined, you could volunteer to actually come down and do trips after this is done. They need medical workers right now, but later they're going to need construction help.
This is great. You're right. This is a great article. It's on the front page of texastribune.org. And there's just a lot of places you can help.
Yes, I mean, Texas is not a place with a great social net. So that's going to make this particularly devastating, I think. And I don't know how we're going to, I think there's going to be a lot of suffering ahead.
The other thing that I'd recommend from Texas Tribune and ProPublica is a major piece of reporting from 2016 called Hell and High Water. And as you probably know, Houston is the largest city in the United States without zoning. And the amount of concrete, Washington Post also had a good graphic on this. The amount of concrete, it's unabsorbent soil anyway. And then the construction, the mad construction in Houston has led to, there was nowhere for the water to go. And, you know, I contrast that with a piece I just saw yesterday about Berlin, where they're trying to make the city into a sponge.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Austin has had impervious cover is a huge debate in Austin, which a lot of people, and it's for precisely this reason, because underneath of a, oh, So we have EcoCrete and all of these things that they don't have in Houston. But Houston has been marketed for decades as being developer friendly. That's what it is. And that's also why it's got incredibly cheap housing.
Yeah.
And that's important to people. And I...
It's not to pun, make a pun, but it's a perfect storm. It's a combination of all of these historic factors and current factors and probably climate change, and it is a disaster. If you're the kind of person who wants to give a donation and kind of have it spread as widely as possible, I know some people don't believe in the Red Cross, but I think the Red Cross is a great place to go. The mayor of Houston's created a relief fund, the Hurricane Harvey Relief Fund. And if you're the kind of person that likes to know who you're giving to, go. I think this is kind of cool. GoFundMe has done something. You know, a lot of people go to GoFundMe to raise money. GoFundMe has compiled a list of all of the Hurricane Harvey relief efforts.
Am I a little cynical? I'm worried about some of these.
Well, you should, but at this, probably not the time to worry. If you want, I want to go to a big national organization, then go to the Red Cross. But
right.
If there's some of these are not great, maybe okay, fine. But anything you can do is going to help a little bit anyway. I agree. There's probably scammers in here, you know.
The Texas Diaper Bank, I'll throw that out there. A lot of people have talked about it. It's a good one. They are raising a ton of money, but diapers and baby supplies are always difficult to come by, and they are a reputable organization that has deep ties in with the food banks. So they can actually make it into the community in a way that's pretty...
It is hard to know.
So, Stacey, before we got on the air, you were starting to talk about how the effect of IoT and how IoT could be used in these kinds of disasters.
So this is me being a super nerd, but I have been monitoring my parents. So my parents live near, it's called the Brazos River, and they're in a mandatory evacuation zone. And so the second I discovered this, I went to the hydrograph data from the U.S. Geological Survey does this. And here I'll put a link to, this is the hydrograph data. Let's find it. I never know where to
put
things.
Can I show? I mean, you tweeted it, so I guess it's kind of public. The picture of your parents' street.
Yes, and that tweet actually has the hydrograph data too. Here it is.
Nice. I can click that link on the tweet. Yeah.
So they've got this, and it's everywhere. That's my parents' house, or the front. That's the view from their front door to the.
And this has been this way. The street's completely flooded for days.
For days.
They can't leave.
No, they can't leave.
I mean, it would be risky for them to leave. I guess they could, but it would be very risky for them to leave.
The car could die.
Well, the car can't go. They had a high pickup truck come and pick up my brother.
Wow.
But the water should be going down. And so what's cool is there's actually the LCRA has wonderful data. And then the various NOAA and the U.S. Geological Survey, you can actually find really good data online right now for how far the rivers are going and how much rainfall has fallen. And to me, it's really comforting to be like, oh, they evacuated my parents because they expected this river to rise to 59, the crest at 59 feet yesterday. So, you know, I've been glued to this thing for the last couple days. And I'm like, oh, it's not going as high. And they keep lowering the forecast. So it's kind of nice. But the other thing, not Internet of Things, is Facebook. My parents aren't on Facebook, and my mom is trying not to have me worry, so she's not sending me a lot of information. But I found a group on Facebook where my parents live. So someone's on... This is kind of creepy, I guess.
No, that's great.
I'm stalking someone who lives near my parents so I can see pictures of
your mom
the street and the house.
Isn't doing it.
Right. And then I also managed to connect... I found out that one of my old friends from high school actually lives near them now. So I connected the two of them. So now I feel like my parents, who don't know a lot of their neighbors, despite having lived there for like 30 years, they now are part of this community of people who will look out for them, and they will also look out for those people. And I found it via Facebook, which weird, because I'm not very into Facebook.
As your mom is. not into it either. How about Facebook safety check? I was talking about this earlier this week. On the one hand, it seems like a great idea that you, if you're on Facebook and they know you're in a disaster area, they say, let your friends and family know you're okay, click this button. And then, but if you're not on Facebook and your friends and family know you live on the Brazos River, or if you are on Facebook but you don't have internet because you're in
right.
a... then people are going to worry about you. I feel like safety check kind of is not the best idea. I don't know. What do you think about that, Stacey?
A couple of my friends, I think because everyone kept asking, did do with a safety check. But some of them who I knew were in danger, they safety checked themselves, but they gave me nothing else. And that was highly unsatisfying.
Yeah.
I mean, this is me personally, right? Like, darn it, I want to hear your story. But I will say the coolest part about Facebook was under, like, what happened in Houston is a lot of people were under evacuation orders, but they couldn't get out because the roads were blocked. So it was hard to know where you could go. And so I was watching my friends and random strangers who were friends of friends talk about, okay, I-90 or 90 was closed eastbound, you know, or I couldn't get past, you know, Belfort on 6 and all of these, like.
That would be useful, wouldn't it?
It seemed to be useful. And then there were just lots of coordination among people like, hey, is anyone in Siena Plantations? My grandmother's cats are there. And if anyone lives in that neighborhood and can go by her house, please. And someone actually ended up kayaking over there.
Wow.
And so we're not going to see a lot of that, but we see a lot of, like, it was heartbreaking to watch my friends, you know, on Saturday be like, hey, we're all good. And then on Monday start realizing that, oh crap, my life is about to irrevocably change because my business and home are actually flooding right now.
Right.
But it was also really heartwarming to see like how people were treating each other and taking care of each other.
Great, great pictures of people carrying each other out. The rescues, it's amazing.
I've seen a lot of those.
And now it's not just the rescue. To the east.
It's things like, hey, the Kroger at this intersection is open if you can get to it. And they have three shelves full of milk. Like, it's not just, that's what kind of blows my mind. And I know that it's boring, but in the people in Houston are actually complaining a lot about the national media coverage, which I don't, they're like, it's too, you know, rescues and we're doomed. And really what would be useful to us is knowing where the grocery stores are or which stores are open, which roads are open, you know, that kind of information. And the Chronicle, the local paper, was doing that. But Facebook was filling a lot of those needs as well. I don't expect CNN to tell me what grocery stores are open, you know, in Sugar Land. So I don't know. I just, the internet was a really, really powerful tool here that I was really glad we had.
Yeah.
And the other piece too is, so when Katrina hit New Orleans, I had started NOLA.com and I'd left the company right before Katrina hit, but there were cases of people who couldn't, you know, there was no Twitter. And there were cases of people who they could barely get a message out to some relative in Utah who would then go on to a forum on NOLA.com, the news site that I helped start. And that was monitored by the police to get the rescue. You saw that crude beginning of it then. And now you have the fact that besides 9/11, besides the fact that we have cell phones and can call, you have new monitoring structures, which I think will only improve more. After every one of these natural disasters, there are efforts to try to put it all together and just do one tool, and then people make 100 tools. But you can see a Facebook and a Twitter creating combined tools that really get to that kind of information more efficiently.
Yeah. And that's why, and, you know, for people who aren't there, you know, there were people who went and walked around neighborhoods and knocked on doors just to make sure. Cause like, even though these were mandatory evacuations, you can't mandatorily evacuate a million people. So it's basically like, get out now. Here's the routes. We don't know how long they're going to be open. And if they stay put, you know, there's no one who actually knows who's where. So in a city like Houston. I don't know. Okay. That was all right.
Well, here's another story. This is from the New York Times. This was a picture of assisted living center in Houston.
Dickinson.
Look how high the water is. It's up to the table. They were told to stay put, but the water kept rising. Somebody tweeted it. Another woman in Houston, there was some conversation on Twitter, oh, that's fake. Then somebody in Houston said, no, that's not fake. See that woman in the blanket? That's my sister. They figured out where it was.
Yeah, the Galveston newspaper did it. So the person who tweeted it was the son of the owner of that nursing home in Dickinson, which is outside of Galveston? I don't know. And so, yes, people thought it was fake, but it was not fake. And
the Galveston county commissioner says, no, we knew they were in there. We were going to rescue them anyway. But I don't think it hurt too much to have that picture all over Twitter. That might have stimulated a little bit faster response. That's just terrifying.
It's awful.
To see that. Wow.
Yeah, and if you see, I mean, like, Instagram has these crazy posts. I guess Rico did a story on Snapchat. What I would have liked to see, Google had a map that showed the road closures. Let's see. I don't know if I can bring it up, but Google Harvey road closures, and the Chronicle had one. But like that was one of the more challenging things, is trying to figure that out. And I feel like Google didn't do a great job, but it tried.
It is interesting that Facebook really has, Google has a safety check, but nobody, I don't know if people know about it. It does seem like Google kind of didn't jump on this one.
Yeah, if you do Google Harvey crisis map, but apparently it wasn't as good as what people needed to actually get out. Now, the challenge is it was changing all the time really quickly.
Right.
So that, yeah. I don't know.
This is where big data should be of value, right? These companies have spent so much time and money to collect every bit of data there is. Presumably, I mean, that collection doesn't stop with a disaster. There seems like they would have a lot of information that would be useful.
Yeah, and also, like, phone companies are going to know where there's an active phone within a cell.
Right.
If you want to find out what people are around, there's other ways to do that. There's a lot more that can be done.
Look at all the flooded streets. Wow.
There's privacy issues here. Yeah, so this is, I mean,
there's ways to handle it, not publicly, but privately to the authorities, to say, you know, if I have zero objection to the cops saying in an emergency such as this, show me, it's like, it'd be like going by with infrared. Show me where you think there are people, phone company.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, what we need is a more coordinated system where, you know, all of these data points can be shared and, somebody's asking, of course, we have a regular on our shows, Dwight Silverman. He's checked in on safety check that he's okay. But that's one of the problems with safety check. That was a couple of days ago. I haven't heard anything since. So that's another one of those.
That's another really good point.
You have Dwight Silverman?
Yes.
He's such a good guy.
Oh, you know Dwight?
He is a good guy.
He was with the Houston Chronicle forever. And
he was on our shows when he was that. And then he recently, about a year ago, said, I'm not going to do your shows anymore because I'm not doing tech anymore.
Oh.
Well, okay.
Because Dwight, we'd have you on. No, it doesn't matter. You still have an opinion on tech, I'm sure.
He wrote a story for Ars Technica.
Oh.
Oh, nope, he did not. He tweeted a story from Ars Technica by Eric Berger. So I don't know if Dwight did it.
The fat vegan chef on Twitter tells me that Waze also has a bunch of editors keeping closed streets updated in their map for Houston area. That's perfect. Waze knows where there is no traffic moving.
Yeah.
So people complained about Waze, and that was what I thought. I was really? Like, huh. So I was very curious what Waze was doing, because there
Waze generally depends upon manual street closure, and it's actually a pain to report a closed street.
Oh, okay. Because a lot of people were
Apple Maps was showing closures. I mean, it seems like map programs, that's one of the first things they should do, especially since driving in a flooded area is so dangerous. That's how a lot of people die, including a Houston police sergeant. You would think that don't drive here would be a very high priority.
Well, it changes so rapidly. I think that is part of the issue.
But that's where Waze, I would think, could be really be hugely valuable. That's the one kind of you know, constantly updated crowdsourced information for roads. Waze should have add a button, you know, flooding here.
Maybe during a crisis, perhaps. And the other challenge is rerouting someone as the roads close is really tough.
Right.
Like, mm-hmm. I can't imagine trying to drive out of what basically is like scenes from the apocalypse. You know, yeah. You're like, oh, jeebus.
Yeah.
So that's Harvey.
Harvey, that was our Harvey news.
Yeah, we've done our Harvey.
And Dwight is fine. He's on Twitter and he's active. And as you said, he's tweeting a lot of Houston news, including pictures of the Chronicle newsroom with the news warehouse in emergency mode. Many journalists working remotely. There's a little bit of water there on the floor in the newsroom. Yeah, but still people in there. I can't even imagine. I just can't imagine what that must be like. Are you tempted to go down there, Stacey? Probably not.
When I can get down there, I will go down there to volunteer.
Good.
But right now, there's no way to... I would not help at this moment in time. I would just be another body in the way.
You don't want to get in the way. That's right. Well, I think you gave us the best resource, which is that, what is it again? The Texas
Tribune.
Tribune.org. And they have right on the front page there a way that you can get help or help, depending on what your particular needs are. It's the second article down, how to get and offer help after Hurricane Harvey. And that's a really good resource. I think everybody watching this probably wants to reach out in some way. The good thing is you do see all the tech companies making it easy to donate. Apple has always been very good about that, putting a Red Cross donation button on its iTunes store. So it's very easy to, you know, give $10. I saw a great tweet this morning. Ladies, if a guy hits you up in a bar and asks for your phone number, take his phone and text $10 to the Red Cross. I thought that was a good idea.
They could do that on the new Facebook show. One more here. USC Waller on Twitter says that who is a volunteer Waze map updater.
Yeah.
Says the Waze has 50 plus volunteer editors closing roads. We depend on info from user reports, Twitter, government reports, etc.
That makes sense. That makes sense.
And he or she is map editor and South Carolina state manager.
Yeah.
An environmental engineer. Oh. So you know your stuff.
Awesome.
Really interesting.
Yeah.
All right.
I wonder if you could pull in data from the API. I know someone complained during the rain on the weekend to Google that Austin has a site called ATX Floods, and all the rain gauges, they pull in data to this website that says, hey, we're underwater. This road is now closed. So if you go to ATX Floods, but apparently during the flooding that we had in Austin, which was very minor, but we were all like, we're getting a lot of rain. It exceeded its API calls, basically, to Google. And so they had to ask for help from Google.
And in the rest of the world, Google Maps now makes it easier for you to find parking.
Woo!
Parking, not really a problem in Houston, but the rest of the world, you can. There's actually a parking difficulty icon on the destination card. And I know.
I saw this when I was in Seattle. Were they testing it a couple of weeks ago?
Yeah, it's been slowly rolled out. And Seattle was one of the places. In fact, they're now adding cities outside the U.S., including Amsterdam, London, Madrid, Moscow, Paris, Rome, Sao Paulo, Toronto, and Vancouver. You can find parking garages near your destination when you use maps. Automatically add it to your trip. So you see the button with the P and the plus. You can add parking to your trip. It also includes walking time to your final destination. Well, that's what's fascinating about this flood thing is we're kind of in this weird world where there's should be ample data, stuff like this, and then there's not enough data, or maybe there's silos, data silos or whatever. But obviously, Google's made a deal with parking garages. In fact, Google's it's TechCrunch is speculating that at some point, Google might add the ability to make a reservation for a parking spot, kind of like OpenTable for parking.
You can do that for your car if you're on the eCharge network,
That's a good idea. Yeah, for the electric cars. Yeah. It's not in Austin. Atlanta, Boston, Charlotte, Chicago, Cleveland, Dallas, Fort Worth, D.C., Denver, Detroit, Houston, L.A., Miami, Minneapolis, St. Paul, New York City, Orlando, Philadelphia, Phoenix, Pittsburgh, Portland, San Diego, Sacramento, San Francisco, as you noted, Seattle, and St. Louis and Tampa. Google Maps.
It was very accurate in Seattle, too.
Nice.
Like, it would be like, this has ample parking. And I'm like, whoa. And then I was like, oh, it really does.
It did.
So.
If you want to have some fun gaming Google, you can game the Google Translation app. Somebody has created a translation for Kim Jong-un as Mr. Squidward. Of course, one of the characters in SpongeBob SquarePants. I didn't know Translate was crowdsourced. Well, actually, they're translating Supreme Leader as Mr. Squidward. Yeah. Yeah. So a lot of people got on there and said Supreme Leader in Korean, that equals Mr. Squidward in English.
I bet you didn't have to get a lot of people because I bet there's not a lot of people
trying to translate it. No.
Korean.
Nope. I like it. So, leverage your power.
Ta-da. So are we going to talk about, let's see, AR and AR Core? Because there was TechCrunch. They were playing with some Apple AR stuff. And so I was like, they were talking about AR selfies. I don't know if you saw that.
Yeah. So that's one of the things that will be coming in the new iPhone, we hear.
Yes.
AR and Core is Google's dumbed down version of Tango. See, Google's been ahead of this game with Tango, but the problem is to do Tango, you need a certain hardware platform. AR Kit, so successful that Google has unveiled AR Core, which is similar, not exactly the same thing, but the idea is it makes it easier for developers to take advantage. And you've seen, we've shown this, but you may have seen these demo videos. Tango requires a significant hardware, and of course you got to talk phone companies into putting that hardware in. To date, only the Asus Zenfone is a consumer-grade Tango platform, but AR Core does not. So it'll work on almost anything, you know, modern, the Pixels, Samsung, Galaxy S8, as long as you're running 7.0 or higher. So suddenly...
I was going to ask, because I was a little confused. Is every device going to be AR Core certified, or do you just have to have some...
It's like AR Kit. So Apple's AR Kit goes down to, I think, the iPhone 5 or 5S. This is kind of similar, AR Core. You have to have Android 7, which is, in most cases, means a fairly modern Android handset. But you don't need any special hardware, which means it's not going to be as good as Tango.
Right.
No, but it's a toy to play with. Learn.
And here's some examples.
If you can only get Tango on one device or two devices.
Right.
You know.
Exactly. Yeah.
It's awesome, but you can't have it.
It's hard to know. I think this is Google. It's a little preemptive strike from Google because the iPhone the new iPhone will be coming out September 12th or announced September 12th, we think now. So that's 2 weeks. That's a week from Tuesday, 2 weeks from yesterday.
And the new Pixel.
Pixel, we have a date. I don't know how, you know, accurate this date. It's not an official date. But somebody said October 5th. Let me see if I can find that article.
It's on the rundown.
Last year, here it is from Android Police. Last year, Google tried to get it out before Apple's announcement. This year, I guess they figured, well, what are you going to do?
Yeah. Because Apple's is on September 12th.
Right.
Right?
Right.
So. That's soon.
Soon. It's a week from Tuesday. Not much more to say about the Pixel 2. We already know a lot about what's in it. Don't get all excited because it has the 836 Snapdragon in it. It's one beta. It's pretty much the same. The 845 will be the next big Snapdragon jump, and that's not going to be till next year. The Eclipse Mega Movie. We talked a little bit about the fact that Google was trying to get people who were going to be taking pictures of the eclipse to contribute. I think they got, what did they say, 119
shown up in cultural stories
photographers. And the idea will be, and I think this is kind of unique, to get video of the eclipse as it travels over the country. So this is a video that Google has posted. They posted it this morning of the making of some of the people who will be doing photography and videos.
Will be or did?
I mean, did, sorry, but who will be in
the... I thought I'd just gone back
in time.
You
missed it. You missed it. Sorry. No, yes. Who did it and will be in the mega movie. Here's the Eclipse Mega. Is the Mega Movie out? Oh, good. Let me look. Hold on a second. These are people doing it. Exactly Scooter X just gave me
it's
a
like link. Rick Smolin's A Day in the Life of America stuff.
I love the idea. 34,000 images of the eclipse. You ready to watch? In the Mega Movie. So they've never kind of taken I think you're getting audio from, let me see if you're getting audio from another tab.
I have too many tabs open. Okay.
Here is the audio without... Algorithmically stitched together based on time and location to give us an extended look at the sun. And so we're kind of, you can see on the lower right, you can see the path.
Wait, do I need my glasses to view
no,
this?
No, you can look at this. It's safe.
Unless you're the president of the United States.
Yeah, right. You know what? He's so amazing, he can look at the sun without glasses. You know what? This seemed like a good idea at the time.
Jeez. Did you see Shep Smith the day of the eclipse? Did you see that compilation?
No.
I put it on. I'm telling you, it's hilarious. I put it on last week's rundown.
I missed it. Obviously, I wasn't.
Shep Smith.
So this is really not such a great idea, as it turns out.
No,
it's just
not.
A lot of pictures exactly the same.
Well, isn't it to study the corona of the sun?
None of these. Look how.
No, this is to make a Google movie.
Look how crap the quality is on most of these. I think astronomers had their own pictures. I'm guessing. I don't know. Your friend Neil deGrasse Tyson was kind of dismissive of amateurs making such a big deal of the eclipses. They happen all the time. What are you so excited about?
So if you, I just put it on the rundown of the comments, the Shep Smith video.
Someone at Fox News forced Shepard Smith to come to work and cover the solar eclipse. Let's just say he gave.
If I put this here and my phone here, I have a total eclipse of the phone. Fascinating. It's amazing. Oh, my God. The moon has gotten in
front
of us.
He's kind of like
okay,
Neil.
Well, I don't know. It's interesting looking.
Like
the
me.
Sun looks a little like the moon up there in my wall. If you mention it, you got to sing it. Where the deer and the antelope play.
Oh, my God.
Wow. Would you look at that? It's a total eclipse of the sun.
And you look up at
the sun. They know this is all it's going to be, right? Just a moon
Shepard,
over the sun.
Calm down.
Oh, the sun's
it's
coming
okay.
Back now.
Are coming out.
Oh, my goodness. That didn't last long. Yoo-hoo! I want to hear more. No, because now you can look at the thing. It's covered, so you can look at it.
Do you think he got a memo?
The sun is returning. Jalapeno.
Like, Rupert doesn't really care about this.
Weird.
No, I think it's the opposite.
Dark,
I think he's, you know, Shep will once in a while mock his own.
He does his own thing.
Amazing.
Yeah.
I love nature. Amazing. I'm going to die now, and we hope that doesn't happen. Want to see a total eclipse of this monitor?
Eclipse of the monitor.
It's totally eclipse.
I think he's just making fun of us, like the media.
Yeah, he is.
I thought the eclipse was cool. Damn it!
My wife got mad at me for poo-pooing the eclipse. It was taking away people's fun.
We made the best part of the eclipse was my husband came home in the middle of the day and we cut up our cereal boxes to make our eclipse things and we sat there and looked in them and we're like, yeah, that was cool. But the cooler part was just middle of the day,
cereal
arts and crafts.
Eating cereal in the middle of the day. Because you had to empty those cereal boxes, didn't you?
You know, they come in plastic bags. You can just take them out.
Oh.
I know. When you're terrible people.
So now you have a bunch of nameless plastic
bags
of sugar and grains sitting in your kitchen.
Oh, we only have healthy Kashi-like cereal.
Kashi's good. Healthy it's not, but Kashi is good. Did you? Are you saving a Bigly at the Whole Foods these days?
I am not. So I'm not a Whole Foods shopper. I'm a Central Market shopper.
Okay,
I know. It's a Texas thing. Gotta stay true to my HEB roots.
Prices cut as much as 43%, and they're selling Amazon Echoes, farm fresh Amazon Echoes in the store, which cracks me up. I don't know what to say about that.
I'm excited about, you know, syncing all that together. I can't wait to get discounts because I'm a Prime member, I guess.
Yeah.
Whole Foods has good salsa.
actually, the prepared foods at Whole Foods are quite good.
And an amazing cinnamon bread. Holy cow.
Okay, oh, boy. Cinnamon bread. Jeff,
no,
do we need to nationalize Google, Facebook, and Amazon?
Oy, this is peak Guardian. This is my communist friends.
How crisis is looming.
How amazing.
These monopoly platforms are hoovering up our data, have no competition. They're too big to serve the public interest, writes Nick Chernichek.
Oy, oy, oy.
Come on now. You got to do more than you got to tell us why he's wrong.
As one person said on Facebook when I posted it, you know, okay, well, what government takes it over? And one somebody said, how about Liechtenstein?
Yeah.
Which government do you trust to take over the internet, folks?
Estonia. Estonia.
Estonia.
Estonia. Estonia. Internet. I trust Estonia to run.
I salute the Estonian internet. The Iceland internet. That'd be all right.
They set up their banking.
Iceland has a little financial, little corruption in the financial.
Well, but they fixed it since, I think.
All right.
Yeah, it's the classic absurd argument taken to the absurd length, which is we don't like them. They're capitalists. They shouldn't be making money. They're stealing from us. They have too much power. They're too big. So let's just take them over. Yeah, yeah. The government's going to do a great job running Amazon and Google. And Facebook. So,
you know, obviously, if you think about it, there's not a good nationalization solution. On the other hand, I don't think it's unreasonable to worry a little bit about the scale to which these companies are reaching and the power that they're aggregating.
So did you see the article by Kashmir Hill a couple days ago about how
Facebook, there you go. There's got to be an explanation.
Yeah.
Well, yes, there is probably an explanation.
You want to explain it?
So she wrote an article in which she said it's somehow Facebook, with its unrevealed algorithms, figured out a family member of mine that I did not know about and recommended them to me. Facebook figured out my family secrets and won't tell me how. And it won't tell me how. This is Kashmir writing in Gizmodo.
So I think what's challenging here is right now, most of the population is not aware of how much information is being quote unquote hoovered up about them and how it's being used. And there's no transparency on some of this. And people take it as unbiased because it's an algorithm, because it comes from Facebook or because it comes from a computer. And we see that trust in algorithms playing out with like, oh, we'll have software to predict recidivism among, you know, inmates and use that to determine parole, but we don't understand how it's exactly working. So I don't think it's wrong to say, Facebook, this is a little weird that you're doing this and giving me these suggestions. How are you doing it? There was another story about someone seeing an ad for a mini projector after on Facebook, I think it was, or maybe it was on Instagram, after talking to someone about it, and he was concerned that...
I hear these stories a lot. My echo is listening to me, and so it's...
I don't buy them for a second.
I think the concerns are understandable, and I think if companies actually were a little bit more transparent about how they're doing things and getting data...
I absolutely agree with that.
That would help allay these assuage.
Well, speaking of transparency, so... Meanwhile, then Google and Facebook each took what I think were numb-nutty moves this week. Google, Eric Schmidt supposedly went to the Numerica Foundation. He did something that someone affiliated with him had run. The Numerica Foundation then reportedly got rid of that writer, and then the whole project, which is around monopolies, that was at Numerica, left. This is not a good thing for Google to be anywhere near, especially when the project about monopolies was involving the EU. So it looks like Google, and I don't know, you know, maybe Google did or didn't, maybe New America overreacted or didn't. I don't know, you know, where the pressure points are and how great the pressure was. But the worst thing to happen is for Google to do that. Meanwhile, Facebook hired the former public editor of the New York Times, Liz Spade, to handle transparency.
Now, Gizmodo called her incompetent.
And the outline called it worse.
I know people didn't like her, and we talked a little bit about it on Sunday, and there were some odd things that she did, but I thought, I'm going to defer in judgment until I hear
The headlines were cruel. In fact, I tweeted that story. Facebook hired the worst person in media to work on transparency.
Is that fair? Is that really her?
Well, I mean, I just tweeted that, and then a friend of hers excoriated me. And I said, okay, yeah, this is not civil. And I said, you're right. The headline on its own does say that. But the piece is actually, though devastating, a fair compilation. And I think that...
This is Kara Swisher writing in Recode. And she points out that she, as a cub reporter, worked for Liz Spade at the Washington Post when
people
she was
first
starting
People at the
Washington
Post out. Respected the hell out of Liz.
Yeah.
And I do not doubt that for a second. But her tenure at Columbia Journalism Review and her tenure at the New York Times was a real problem.
She had a problem. She was following the most amazing public editor of the New York Times. And,
that's one.
And
Margaret
when the
Sullivan.
New York Times fired Liz, they killed the position because they realized you can't do better than Sullivan.
You know, the worst thing that in a job that involves how media are being manipulated right now, she got manipulated in a fairly public way, and she went on to Tucker Carlson's show complaining about a writer's tweets. These were unfortunate things. So my only point is this: so in this case, Facebook I think is trying to do the right thing, but because the paradoxes of this is because they're not being transparent enough to hear people's opinions and voices and get nominees. There are many people who could do this job really well. I think, take a step backwards. And full disclosure again, remember, I took a lot of money from Facebook for the News Integrity Initiative. I'm independent of Facebook, and I'm using that independence right now. But both are illuminating of the fact, and I'm saying this, I certainly don't want to nationalize Google and Facebook and Amazon, but they do have a hell of a lot to learn about transparency. Back to your point, Stacey. And these are two examples where they're just not seeing an inch ahead of their nose in terms of what the reaction is going to be, either in the public or in the case of the Spade thing among journalists. And they're not connected enough with the world around them.
I don't know if Facebook actually cares about what journalists think. And I don't think that's a terrible thing, in all honesty, with this hiring. I don't think they were like, yeah, let's find this person. She's free. Let's ask her. I think
that's the point of the hiring, though. I'll disagree. I think that was the whole point of the hiring. If journalists were not on Facebook's rear end all the time, I don't think they would have hired this at all. They're doing the Facebook Journalism Project. A woman named Anya Kerr does a brilliant job with that. They hired Campbell Brown. She's working with Fiji Simo, the head of product, to tell media companies a lot more about what they're doing. They invested in NII. This is all, I think, very good stuff. So they do care about what journalists
Liz
think.
She, from my understanding, and you're closer to this than I am, but she is internally facing, not externally. So she is not dealing with journalists. She's dealing with how journalists see things on Facebook internally and trying to explain to them things, correct?
What's going to happen at some point is people are going to say, gee, the next time Facebook isn't transparent when it should be, they're going to come back to this and say, well, see, didn't do any good. Or what those two nasty articles said, nasty in the headlines at least, mm-hmm. was Facebook doesn't care about transparency. They're just doing this to say they care about transparency. And I think that's too cynical. I think that's wrong.
Well,
I think
it's then they would have hired someone Liz really. Yeah, then they would have hired someone who's really amazing, as opposed to a laughingstock for all journalists. If they,
that's the like point that they're trying to make.
Okay,
I don't think this was a deliberate attempt to hire someone who wasn't amazing. I think it was that they weren't out of their shell enough to talk to people to find out what the reaction would be.
Ah, okay. I can see that.
So if you're Liz Spade, I don't know if she's on the job yet, but if you're Liz Spade and you're on the job and you read Kashmir Hill's article at Facebook should be more transparent, how did it – by the way, it was quite a stretch. The person that was recommended to Kashmir Hill was her, I think, great aunt by marriage – but had no other connection. It wasn't like, you know, mostly when I get recommendations for Facebook, it's three other people you know this person or whatever. Nobody, there was no connection at all. Nobody she knew followed her. She wrote to the person. The person said, yeah, I am related to you. It's a really kind of spooky thing. And I think is often the case. It was a question. Humans have an amazing ability to detect coincidence. And then it's somehow built into us, I'm sure there's an evolutionary reason for it, to ascribe agency to coincidences, to say, aha, see,
yes,
false causality, that kind of thing. So, but I have to say, having read Kashmir's article and knowing Kashmir and really thinking the
she's
world
very
of her,
good.
She's really good.
Yeah, she's great.
It is a little puzzling. How did Facebook know? So if this would be the very first thing Liz Spade might take on, what would you do?
Mm-hmm. I think you'd go reporting and try to get to the experts inside and try to get external experts.
Yeah, how did we find this?
Say
out?
How could this happen?
Yeah,
I've told the story on the show before of the journalist I talked to who got his diagnosis of multiple sclerosis because he was sharing symptoms he was feeling and somebody bought those symptoms and advertised to them.
Right.
There are explanations of how these things can happen.
Technology lends itself to that. It's often such a black box that we don't know. And if we were shown how it happened, you go, oh yeah, I guess so. Because you do. You hear all the time people say, hey, I was talking with a friend about umbrellas, and all of a sudden I got an umbrella ad. That's a human brain. That's just the way the brain works. You know, you think about buying a car, all you see is that car on the road all of a sudden.
Yeah, exactly.
Go, Stacey. No, mine was complaining. You go, because you're going to be additive.
You guys are too damn polite.
We are. Because we are soft-spoken.
Okay.
We are. We're very soft-spoken.
This is kind of weird.
Oh, no more.
So it bothers you when people talk like that?
It does. Yeah. I don't like it.
There's a name for that, the Bader-Meinhof phenomenon. Now, I know Bader-Meinhof is the Bader-Meinhof gang, the terrorist gang. Were they the ones who, I'm trying to remember what terrible...
They kidnapped and killed an executive of some sort or a government official of some sort.
So why is it called the Bader-Meinhof?
Because it was, I think, Frau Bader and Herr Meinhof. I can't remember.
The Bader-Meinhof complex. This is so fascinating.
I was going to say with Facebook
This is a film. No, wait a minute. All right, never mind. I'm sorry. Go ahead. You say something now because I've not
answered. Her concern was that they were buying data from data brokers, which could make those correlations because you can see family. And if that was how it was done and it isn't a coincidence, that's actually really creepy,
right?
I would think. I mean, I don't give Facebook enough data. It's got to buy all the data about me, too.
Yeah.
She called this woman who she found a great aunt by marriage. And the reason it was far-fetched is because her biological.
It's very Southern Gothic.
It's very Southern Gothic. My biological grandfather's a man I never met with the last name Porter, who abandoned my father when he was a baby. My father was adopted by a man whose last name was Hill. The Porter family grew up and lived in Ohio. She grew up in Florida, so she'd known there were blood relatives out there, but there was no reason to think I'd ever meet them, et cetera, et cetera. And weirdly enough, she recognized she's a Porter. I remember that name. So she couldn't figure out why she was showing up in her timeline. She called her. She said, are you related to my biological grandfather? Yes, she said. She is my great aunt by marriage. She's married to my biological grandfather's brother. Met him 35 years ago, the year after I was born. Facebook knew my family tree better than I did. They had a nice conversation. I was grateful that Facebook had given me the chance to talk to an unknown relation, but awed and disconcerted by its apparent omniscience. So, I mean, it's hard to even imagine what data broker they might have bought this from. It could just very well be. Well, I don't know. How do you explain it? So that's Liz Spade's job now, right?
Well, I don't. We'll see what it is.
I want that job.
Yeah,
Cashmere is awesome. I have to say, and you know,
she does the work.
She will not. She'll really not let this down. I think we'll find out more. I think
she doesn't treat the whole privacy stuff from an emotional level. She treats it from a journalistic
level.
She's
interested. That really makes it like what's going on. Yeah.
Yeah. So what ties these three things together? Because the platforms aren't as self-aware as they should be in how people see them, that leads to this kind of idiocy in The Guardian of let's nationalize them.
Yeah.
No, and it goes too far, and they've got to get smarter about this. And they've got to be more, and they have to be more open. That's the paradox of this. They do have to be more transparent. They do have to understand better how people react to what they do. And recognize their openness, and they're trying things, they're doing things, but then they just lose some steps.
Yeah.
And I don't know what happened in the Google situation, but there should be transparency there to figure out what happened. And if Google did try to muscle opinions against it to be shut up, they should talk.
5 hours ago, Anne-Marie Slaughter put out a statement in response to this, saying that. I guess the quotes in Twitter, she said the quotes were taken out of context. And then they put a statement up on the New America page that says they'd been working with this dude to spin out the open markets effort. And
yeah, it sounded like a cover up to me.
It sounds, yeah, there were other quotes. Kind of,
she sounds like there are quotes where people said She said, are you kidding? You're going to lose us our biggest sponsor. I mean, there's
right
a little I don't know.
6 minutes ago, Kenneth Vogel, who wrote a New York Times story, Anne-Marie tweeted, this story is false. New York Times story will issue a statement shortly. We're proud of the open markets work. Then Kenneth Vogel, a New York Times reporter, said, I asked New America to ID any alleged errors in my story several hours ago. They've yet to do so.
Yeah.
Please ID the errors or correct this tweet. So we're going to get a he said, she said across this. The thing to do, God, if you've learned, Google, New America, open markets, reveal.
But I have to say, even if this story is exactly factually true, and I don't doubt that it is, it doesn't necessarily implicate Google. It could simply be...
That's what I'm saying.
The director of the think tank thinking... And this happens all the time, preemptively. We have to bend over backwards, for instance. Our show hosts know who our advertisers are. They need to so that they can be proactive in disclaiming the relationship. But what I have to really kind of overemphasize is that should not have a chilling effect on your coverage. So we don't ever say to our, you know, our hosts, oh, you can't say something bad. I didn't say that to you, Stacey, when you started to slam one of our sponsors. But I can't promise that Stacey hasn't have it in her head. Oh, I better not say anything bad about Ring doorbells.
Exactly. Well, listen, let me.
I hope you know that you can say bad things about Ring doorbells, Stacey.
And so in the newsroom, in various newsrooms that I have been in, we have joked about, oh, this story is going to kill that sponsorship. That is not an uncommon thing to say.
Right.
We still
run
the story.
Yeah, but you still do the story. Yeah.
Yeah,
well,
as you should
be open myself and say that I had to think three times about the Facebook thing, because on the one hand, what happened in the end, I was going to post about it, but I waited so long it wasn't newsworthy anymore, so I didn't. But on the one hand, I probably would have said something about it, as I'm saying right now. This is the first chance to do so on this show. But if I don't, do people wonder, well, Jarvis is chilling himself because he's not criticizing Facebook when he otherwise would. It's a situation we're always in. And the only answer is transparency to some level.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's why I said
it doesn't necessarily incriminate Google or one way or the other.
No, we don't know yet.
We just don't know.
I could see a case where Eric Schmidt says, that story is stupid and wrong. And then someone preemptively goes and that means, but that still means that
and in fact, Google that's exactly
and Schmidt
what
need to be aware of their
right.
If that's all that happened, even so, then you always have to do the caveat: don't do anything as I'm saying this. I'm just expressing an opinion, which I can do.
Yeah.
I think that story is full of crap, but it should exist.
Yes. Hey, do you know Google Home is going to be built into vacuum cleaners, appliances,
things? Even more weirdly, that Cortana is going to be built into Amazon Echo?
I know. That is just baffling.
We talked lot about it on Windows Weekly, and the consensus. Now I'd be curious what you think about this, Stacey. Both of our hosts, Mary Jo Foley and Paul Thurrott, said, well, that's because Amazon and Microsoft are also RANs in this, that in fact it's Google and Apple that dominate the intelligent, voice assistants, and that be Google and Microsoft. It's like Sprint and T-Mobile uniting. It's the also RANs that are trying to compete with the big guys. I said, I don't feel like Amazon Echo is an also RAN. I feel like it's the leader in this. So
it's a leader in market. It's an also RAN in actual intelligence. It's like the dumb jock, right? Everybody loves them, but
you haven't talked to Siri much lately, have you?
Well, Siri. Okay, so I don't understand why Siri is even a contender, except for
she talked about Apple. Dumb. She's dumb.
Yeah. Although Apple HomeKit's getting better, we can talk about that on another show.
Google's very smart. I'll grant you that. It's the smartest of the bunch.
And Microsoft doesn't have a market. They just don't have an inroad into the home because they don't have any devices,
Harman Kardon is going to make the first standalone Cortana device.
Yeah,
but right now, it's on your desktop and your phone if you install the Cortana app.
Yeah, so this it is in a way, it is kind of a match made in heaven, I guess. I don't really know. I mean, it's an awkward interface.
It's a match made in the basement.
Yeah, it's like tying the two bricks together and seeing if they float, maybe.
Or two turkeys don't make an eagle, I think was what Mary Jo Foley said. The funny thing is that the person who announced this was Jeff Bezos. And Bezos said something I thought was quite interesting, which is, I imagine a day where you'll have a variety of these, with each with different skill sets and abilities. And just like you'd have a group of friends, you talk to whoever you need help from. And it makes...
Don't you want one device?
No.
And he different says names? No. Of course he does.
Oh, one device and different names wants. Is what he's doing. So you would say to Echo, right. Echo, open Cortana. And then, because I guess it's like a skill. And then Cortana, then it would say, okay, I'm Cortana. What can I do? And then you could say, do things that are specific to Cortana. So Cortana, of course, very good with Microsoft things. You wouldn't say, what's the weather? Because you could have just asked the Echo for the weather. But you might say, add Stacy to my Outlook calendar for July 5th.
So GE Appliances actually has an assistant called Geneva. Geneva is an Echo skill that you say, hey, Madam A, ask Geneva to preheat the oven. And then asking Geneva. And eventually what they want to do is Geneva wants to know what you're cooking. And you'll say, oh, I'm cooking a pot roast. Geneva recommends doing it at this, or ask Geneva to start the dishwasher or to do the laundry. So what they're trying to do, and this makes total sense, if you're a brand, you want to have a brand and an identity in this world where we're going to be talking to computers. Yep. And if you don't, you're going to be left in a lurch because...
But you're also going to have to market the hell out of reminding people to ask for your brand. It's like the app problem on phones.
And I wrote about this a year ago, saying I do not want to have to sit and remember who I ask for.
Being able to say to the Echo, tell Geneva to heat up to 450 degrees and start toasting some toast in my June oven. That would make perfect sense.
What I'd rather do is say, Madam A, turn on my oven. I don't give a hoot
what the name of the oven is.
I mean, I've got a Bosch oven. I've got a June oven. I've got, a Samsung fridge.
What you're going to do is you're going to say, June, what should I cook tonight?
Let me ask Echo. Hey, Echo, what should Stacy cook tonight? I don't know about that. I'll get back to you.
Amazon is going to be able to tell me what to cook tonight. And I can't wait for that day to come, because Amazon's going to get all my grocery orders now that it's got grocery stuff. And I'm going to be
you have three eggs and a chicken left. Yeah.
And a chicken.
You have three eggs.
I suggest mother and child reunion.
Are you using your June oven, though, Leo?
Yeah. You want to see my instant replay? All I do is cook toast.
Really?
Pretty much.
What did I cook? They just added a grill function that I'm really excited about.
Oh, there's a grill. See, I would use that because I do the sous vide. I need something just to grill stuff, just to quickly cook.
They have a hamburger preset now that looks really tasty, but I haven't had meat. We used the June to cook salmon the other night, and we used it to cook broccoli. The broccoli is the best.
How do you? Oh, you bake broccoli? You like roast it?
Holy no! Have you never put your broccoli in the June?
No, I've done cauliflower though. That's probably very similar.
Chop your broccoli. Yeah, that's me chopping broccoli right there.
Yeah, chopping broccoli.
Put a little olive oil.
Yeah.
Shove it in there. It's already preset.
Yeah.
And oh my god, it is the best roast broccoli ever. I do not know why, but it is quite tasty.
You put a little garlic in there, or just the olive oil?
Oh yeah. My sister-in-law went to Israel and brought me back this Dead Sea salt with garlic and rosemary.
Ooh.
Oh yeah, it's good.
Ooh.
Where's my cooking show?
Have you ever done any strudel in your June oven?
Well,
I have
Stacey,
not done
I think
strudel.
You should do it on Facebook.
Oh, that's it. Cooking with Stacy.
Stacy cooks.
No, and you should do it on this network right here. This here network.
See, they're not making him jealous. That's good.
No, do it on a Facebook thing. All right, I've been practicing.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Oh. Sorry. No, I was going to ask Jeff's opinion about the Vogue stuff, but you talk about your stuff because I don't know if we're done.
He was going to do a June oven, I think.
No, I wasn't. I don't even have any ads today, so go ahead. What's the Vogue stuff?
What happened?
I don't know. They hate us.
It always disturbs me.
They hate us.
Here, you want me to give you, I'll give you a dollar and I'll run an ad.
We're going bankrupt. We're going bankrupt right now, right here, right in front of you. No, I don't
know. Everybody's watching people give up their phones.
I've been practicing this all day.
You need some music, Leo.
Dara Khosrowshahi.
Ooh.
Close?
That's pretty good.
Dara Khosrowshahi. I don't know either. Dara Khosrowshahi. What I always say is, if the name comes from a non-Arab, a language with a non-Arabic, a non-Western alphabet, then it's almost always exactly as spelt.
Because it's
transliteration.
Yeah.
Doesn't work with Chinese, but that's another matter. But it works with names from India. It works with names from... Mm-hmm.
Iran.
Yeah, Arabic names. It's pretty much... Anyway, I don't know where Dara is from. Dara Khosrow Shahi, but I'm assuming that every letter... Thank you. Every time I say his name, I want a little thing like that.
that's the macho way to do hey.
Dara Khosrow Shahi is the new CEO of Uber.
Oh, wait. Hey, who is the new CEO of Uber?
Oh, let's hear what she says.
Sorry, I don't know how to help with that yet.
Oh, shut up. Ask your Echo. Anybody have an Echo?
Mine's not near me.
Yeah.
They fight.
I decided, I don't care how he pronounces it, I'm calling him Dara Khosrow Shahi because I pronounce it all
I think day. It's actually Dara.
Dara?
So when the news came out on Sunday, I was at a friend of mine, her house, and she used to work very briefly with him. And she was like, Dara's going to be the CEO of Uber. And there was much drama. But I did not ask the last name pronunciation. It was a missed opportunity of mine, and I'm sorry.
Well, who knows if she's saying it right? How do you pronounce?
Well, she knows him in person.
Here. So she knows him in person doesn't mean anything. Let's see how to pronounce. You know, it's amazing. There is a YouTube video on everything.
Dara Khosrow Shahi.
Khosrow Shahi. Dara Khosrow Shahi. Thank you.
Dara.
That is a YouTube video. Dara Khosrow Shahi.
Somebody made that.
Somebody has a video.
God bless.
I'm telling you, YouTube's got everything, man. Anyway,
find it.
A great article by Ben Thompson on Stratechery. We are endeavoring to get Ben on one of our shows soon to talk about it. He says, Dara, very good choice. Khosrow Shahi used to be the CEO of Expedia before that, the CFO. So he comes from the finance side. He's not a techie necessarily. He's a finance guy. And Ben says that bodes very well for Uber, especially the challenges Uber's facing. He calls him very successful, very stable, and very well compensated. I think they said something like $200 million golden parachute. Let's see, he makes $95 million a year at Expedia.
Wow.
And I do believe that he's going to get a couple of $100 million.
Kara Swisher said Kara had this, she had the tweets hearing from the heating duct in the boardroom air duct right in the boardroom.
You're kidding.
Well,
no, that was they were hilarious. Her, I mean, no, she wasn't.
Oh, it was a joke. Okay.
That part was a joke, but I think she had good information. I think she said one of them. I could be wrong here that Barry Diller was negotiating on his behalf with the board.
He gave a presentation to the board, as I guess all the candidates did. I didn't even know that. And in the presentation, there was a slide, and everybody was quite impressed, that says, don't call me, I'll call you, to the board. Kara writes, it was the best part of his presentation bid to become CEO of Uber. What he meant was, I don't want to hear from the board. I'll ask you if I want advice. That probably is the best advice. The board has been very, very bad in this whole process. There apparently was a lot of infighting over either Meg Whitman or Jeff Immelt, the CEO of GE. Meg Whitman wanted it badly, apparently, was lobbying for it. But Kara, boy, she had the scoop on this.
Boy, did she.
I think she stopped covering Yahoo and moved to Uber, which is a good choice, Kara. She said that there was a mysterious third candidate. We were talking about this Sunday because we knew the board was meeting during TWIT, and we were waiting to hear. Shortly after TWIT, they announced Khosrow Shahi. So his skill moving, really rebuilding Expedia, which was struggling when he took over, and changing their model from a wholesale model to an agency model. I didn't even know that they, I had to read all this and try to understand it before I, could understand Ben's article. But Ben said this is exactly the kind of guy you need because he rebuilt Expedia from the ground up. He didn't do the easy thing. He did the hard
thing. That's true. He did. Expedia did need to be rebuilt, and he did rebuild it. Yeah, that's really interesting.
Yep.
This is actually Remember Yahoo? I think actually getting a financial wizard into Yahoo. Remember Yahoo? Sorry, that was kind of a jerk.
Whatever happened to them? Yeah.
But this was their problem. They hired a product person instead of a financial person. And I think a lot of tech, Silicon Valley companies, tech, this was a good move for precisely the reasons Ben outlines.
Yep.
And because at a certain point in time, you've created a product and now you've got to understand how you disrupted the market from a financial perspective and double down on that. And that's where I think Netflix is going to succeed or fail with its content play. Did it make the right bet? With its content strategy. So I just thought that was kind of, there are parallels we see often in Uber actually, if they recognize this, they made the right decision.
Ben says, it's clear that Khosrow Shahi has demonstrated the patience and resolve to fix problems at their root. And as this year has made clear, Uber's culture needs a fundamental reworking, not simply a fresh coat of paint. Khosrow Shahi seems an ideal candidate to take on the problem at a fundamental level and has already shown at Expedia he's willing to walk the walk on issues of sexism in particular. So in the end, the board, which has been really problematic, did the right thing and hired probably, I agree with Ben, the right person for the job. And we'll see, of course, what he does with Uber. There's a lot of value in Uber. There's no question about that. He said, so, well, the CFO left a few months ago. He said he was worried, Ben, when Ben learned that Uber, for instance, couldn't say at any point in time how much it was paying drivers in bonuses. It didn't have a way to accurately calculate the amount in bonuses that Uber paid to drivers. As I noted in a daily update at the time, Ben writes, this is staggering. Uber cannot measure the single most important factor in its profitability on something approaching a real-time basis. The implication of this lack of tracking is that Uber may not have a clear picture as to what its unit costs are. But, and this is where I went to Lisa and said, what the hell's he talking? Explain balance sheets to me, can you? So, but I think Ben's saying there's a real, that Uber's real strength not to focus on drivers, but, oh, let me see if I can find it because I'm going to misstate it. The Uber's use of the bonus driver with drivers has the whiff of Expedia's using the merchant model, which is what Khosrow Shahi changed. It makes sense in the short term, but it ignores the long-term value of having less friction for suppliers to come on board, the part-time drivers that overwhelmingly favor Lyft. So this is, he says...
What does this mean? What change does this portend?
Well, for one thing, getting the financial reporting in order, having the information that you, of course, you're going to have the right strategy, but having the information first, if you don't have the information, you can't create a proper strategy. But Ben says that, that there's a virtuous cycle with riders. Uber wins not by monopolizing drivers, but by monopolizing riders. In other words, focus on the demand side, not the supply side. Optimizing for demand would suggest giving drivers a bigger cut of each ride such that marginal drivers are encouraged to come back on the network and improve liquidity. His point is that if the best customer experience is going to make more drivers will come to you because they're going to get more work.
Because that's, yeah.
That
that's
does sound like that's concentrated on the drivers.
No, you concentrate on
me. No, it's concentrated. Yeah, it's going, instead of looking,
oh, I see.
You're looking where the money is, and the money is in the hands of the consumers. So if you're a good driver...
The drivers will follow the money.
Money. If there's the demand, the supply will follow.
What's that phrase? Why do you rob banks? Because that's where the money is?
Right.
Why do you drive
every
for
time
Uber?
I take
that's
Uber
where the customers
Lyft.
Are.
Yeah. Every time I take an Uber or Lyft, I ask the drivers, it's just something Stacey can't do. Or I guess you can now, can't you?
I can now. We actually have really good conversations in Austin about that because nobody
Lyft.
Rides... We got Lyft and Uber back, and nobody uses the other apps now. So
really,
when you talk to those drivers, they're like, you know, like, what platforms do you get your rides from? And they're like, oh, Uber and Lyft. I couldn't drive if I were doing Ride Austin.
See,
so it's
and
it,
ultimately,
it was
if
like
Uber's going to beat Lyft, you want to get them to say the same thing. Ben writes, in fact, what makes Uber so valuable and still attractive despite all the recent troubles is its position with riders. The more riders Uber has, the more drivers it will attract, even if the economics are worse relative to other services. Driving at a worse rate is better than not driving at a better one.
given the choice, I ride Lyft because of the reputation of Uber. And right. drivers but, I talk to tend to prefer Lyft, same reason. So culture, at first, it's not just the finances, that, it's culture.
That everything. Will only work, though, Jeff, if you can get a Lyft ride as fast as you get an Uber ride. But yes, if you start I looking agree. At that app and your Lyft ride is a half an hour off and there's a 4 minute away Uber driver, you're going to take yes, Uber.
I agree.
That's how they win.
But the reason that the drivers are going Lyft, the reason that riders are going Lyft, I think, was because of Uber's horrendous reputation.
Right, but you'll only inconvenience yourself so far.
Much, right?
And that's
the single biggest. This is what Ben writes: the single biggest factor that differentiates multi-billion-dollar companies is a scale. I had to really think about this: a scalable advantage in customer acquisition costs. Mm-hmm. Uber has.
Well, that's
that.
A media lesson.
Yeah, it is a media lesson, isn't it?
It is. It is.
It's in everything. I mean,
it's business.
Today, it's everything.
It's called business.
It's back to the previous point about the voice platforms. If the cost of getting someone to remember to ask for Cortana,
right?
There's going to be a marketing cost,
right.
of trying to get people to do that, and that's a subscriber acquisition cost. You know, magazine. When I was in the magazine business, I always wow the students with this. You know, I go through the economics of a magazine. If you have a fancy Condé Nast magazine like Traveler, in the day when it was thick, it would cost $5-6 to print and distribute. So $6 times 12 is what?
72.
Yes. Right. And then it would cost anywhere from round numbers $15 to $30 in marketing as a subscriber acquisition cost. So you're now out $100. What do you charge for the subscription? $1 a copy. Basic rate. You're getting $12. So you're out $88.
Yikes.
But obviously the advertising was so rich. That's how the economics of American magazines worked for years, no longer.
It's, you know, what's interesting is the podcast model is similar because every listener costs us money.
Really?
Yes.
I'm apparently doing a crappy job.
Well,
how is that?
Who pays for your downloads?
I do. I'm on Libsyn. So,
okay. Libsyn's unusual because they don't charge you for downloads. They charge you for storage unless they've changed their model.
No, they charge me to host it. So
right, but they don't. So if you had 1 million viewers or 10 viewers, it would cost you the same.
Right.
See, that's breaking that model because the truth is, Libsyn's hiding it from you, but but every download is what costs money.
I was going to say, I know how the internet works.
Yeah. So Libsyn, because of their business model, hides that from you. But
right.
in
well,
fact,
also probably being subsidized by
well. Subsidies always confuse things. So,
well,
but,
no,
but the real cost of a podcast is much like the magazine cost, which is everybody who listens costs you money. So all of the same issues, kind of in a smaller scale, but all the same issues. For instance, magazines tightly control circulation. You don't want to have suddenly 5 million readers. You'd break the bank because you'd have to print 5 million magazines.
You want readers for multiple readers per copy. You don't want that many subscribers.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Right.
When I started EW, they begged and begged and begged and said, can't this be biweekly? Can't this please be biweekly? I said, no. It makes no sense. It doesn't work.
Yeah.
Because the physical cost of
the pass
would be much – well, and the amount of circ revenue you can get would be about the same.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Anyway, but see, Libsyn kind of hides it. So I don't know. I guess you don't have to worry about it. So that's a good thing.
So
same thing happens with YouTube, by the way. Google eats the cost of the downloads, so you don't have to worry about it.
Yeah,
I think Libsyn also the pay. So what people who get 600 downloads versus what I pay for my 25,000 downloads are very like.
Oh, you do pay for downloads then.
No, sorry, I don't. What Libsyn pays. So the people who only get downloaded 600 times.
You're costing Libsyn a lot more money. Yeah.
Right, but they're making it up on people with their other podcasts, the Vanity podcast, because there's lots of shows that don't do any. I mean, they just they have a very small audience.
Right.
I have a small audience.
Right.
But
so how much do you see advertising for Uber and Lyft?
How much do I see advertising?
I don't see a lot. That's interesting.
Because you just said the subscriber, the rider acquisition cost, customer acquisition cost.
Well, so customer subscription cost.
How do
I would
they
imagine
get,
for
what you're
them
asking
includes,
is how do they get more riders?
Yes.
Yeah.
I think it includes things like thinking about I was going to say latency, but how long someone's waiting. It's right. App development costs.
Yeah, but does Uber advertise? Well, yeah, Uber advertises.
They do. They send out emails to people like, go take a ride, here's ice cream stuff.
What I'm saying is they're going to hit a point where they're going to have to start marketing.
Well, it's not just customer acquisition costs. He's arguing about the whole customer experience. Right. So they spend a lot
of money developing. Which is a marketing cost in essence.
Okay.
So Jim Beam is giving away 10,000 Uber rides in Chicago for the World Series. That's an interest. See, I think Uber wants to do kind of more or less traditional marketing, right? So if you think about it, this is a great, I don't know how much they paid Jim Beam, or maybe they just gave them free rides. But those 10,000 people, many of them may be taking their first Uber ride. And that's one way to get customers. Oh, this was pretty nice. It was a lot better than a cab.
But that's an acquisition cost.
Yes.
Yes.
That's when I started
it's
EW,
the kind of marketing advertising they're doing. It's just a little non-standard.
We had a 4 free issue offer, which is very common, and it's acquisition cost.
Right.
Oh, you're on the newsstand.
Right.
You have more copies. You want lots of copies there, so the waste is acquisition cost.
Right. Right. Oh, all right.
We're boring, Leo.
Dara Khosrowshahi.
Now we are.
Shahi.
Wait, I did want to ask Jeff's opinion about this Google Home Vogue thing, because you're always talking about new ways of telling stories. Mm-hmm. This does not seem quite like total storytelling, but if you see...
Why don't you describe it to our audience?
So Vogue signed a partnership with Google, and now you can ask your Google Home to talk to Vogue, and then you can do things like ask, what was the interviewee like? Or, you know, what were they wearing?
Go behind the scenes.
Yeah, and I thought that was kind of an interesting way to add to an existing story or article. But maybe it's just gimmicky. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know either. I'm sorry. I'm going to go back to Butterfly Effect and custom porn.
Oh, Lord.
because what really struck me is this idea that... it's special that we're storytellers. That makes us special. You can only get stories from us. No. Everybody can make stories now. Everybody can buy stories they want for themselves now. Every company can build stories now. So I don't know that's what I expect from a voice conversation, is that it's too media centric. It's in general. We're always media centric. We always think you want to know more about us. We should want to know more about you. And that's the opportunity, is to hear what people are asking and then to answer that. So I don't know. I'll wait and see. I'll keep it in mind, but I don't know.
Who pays for the Vogue behind-the-scenes content on the Google Home?
That, Vogue. I'm not sure. I assume it's Vogue who built something, because you'd have to build like a, what do they call them?
Yeah, but
it's not a skill. It's
so. Whatever. But does Vogue pay Google, or does Google pay Vogue, or do they give it away?
I'll bet it's neither. In this
Once
case.
Google Home is prompted.
I bet they're working together.
So I guess the way it works, in the first campaign of its kind, readers will be able to ask the assistant on Google Home for more information on 5 articles. Interesting, Google Home, does it not work on the regular assistant? Once it's prompted with a question, the writers behind the piece will share personal tidbits from their celebrity sit-downs, including some funny anecdotes. First up on our list, did Jennifer Lawrence finish that bottle of Old Granddad bourbon? Let me ask. I got to turn on my sound here on my Google Assistant. Did Jennifer Lawrence finish that bottle of Old Granddad bourbon?
You got to talk to Vogue first.
These are the top results.
No, it didn't do it.
You have to ask it to talk to Vogue.
Oh. Talk to Vogue. Hi, this is Vogue's.
Let's get Vogue. Whoa. Hi. This is Vogue's Chloe Mel, and welcome to the Vogue September issue. We've partnered with Google Home to bring you exclusive behind-the-scenes material from our editors and writers about some of the stories they've created. Just look out for the Google Home callouts at the end of select articles to learn more.
Oh, that's like barcodes. That's like QCAT.
It's like the QCAT.
Would you like to hear about Jennifer Lawrence, Oprah Winfrey, Nicole Kidman, Serena Williams, or Megyn Kelly?
Yes.
I'm sorry, I didn't catch that. Would you like to hear about Jennifer Lawrence, Oprah Winfrey?
You've got to tell her one.
Serena Williams, pick a name.
or Megyn Kelly?
Jennifer Lawrence.
And there's all of us in a nutshell.
Here's writer Jason Gay about Jennifer Lawrence.
What's Jennifer Lawrence like in person? I like to think...
I didn't ask you that. So you wanted to hear about Megyn Kelly, and what did you? Who did you want to hear about, Stacey?
Serena Williams, because she's awesome.
It does. It's us in a nutshell. I wanted the beautiful movie star. You wanted the Fox News personality.
Media story.
And you wanted the tennis star. That's why we make a great team.
All right. Well, having heard that.
That's not going to be that useful. I don't think that's much.
No.
I don't think so.
I don't think it adds anything to Google Home.
Media centric.
I would guess
you can't get enough of us.
I would guess Vogue paid them for that. That would be my guess after hearing it. Google has decided not to appeal the EU shopping decision, but in fact, to try to find a way to comply.
So this does. Oh, does this cut off an appeal? I thought they had a deadline. I thought they had a deadline no matter what.
The company had 60 days to propose how it would stop its illegal content. And 90 days to make changes on how they display shopping results. The obligation is fully Google's responsibility, said the European Union in an emailed statement.
I don't think that cuts off. I think that's the requirement.
Google
of the
has the option of challenging the fine and antitrust order to the EU courts, which can take years to reach a final decision. Next week's Intel ruling will come some 8 years after the EU fine.
This is the absurdity of this.
8 years. So the EU now has a month.
What was Intel doing wrong, by the way? Does anybody remember what Intel was doing wrong?
I think they were dumping. Intel said they were mystified as to what regulators wanted the company to do to comply with an order to halt anti-competitive rebates for chip sales to computer makers. So 8 years later, they got a $1.06 billion fine.
Okay, they were dumping all over, and it was really sucky.
They were dumping.
I mean, killing AMD on that one.
The EU now has a month to check if Google's planned changes will fit the bill. Regulators are also expected to levy fines and separate investigations into Google's Android mobile phone software, as well as the AdSense advertising service. Margaret Vestager, the EU antitrust chief, has also threatened further probes. If Margaret Vestager comes to you and says, I have further probes I would like to do, just run on travel or map services. So I guess it doesn't preclude an appeal. It's just their attempt to, can't we just get along?
Yeah, and if they didn't make any changes, they could fined up to 5% of gross. Yeah.
Google spokeswoman said it's sharing that plan with regulators before the deadline expires, but declined to comment further. This is the one with the 2.4 billion euro fine. But there's, could you take years before that money is collected? It took 8 years to get Intel. Would they not get? I think they're still going to get the fine no matter what, right? Even if they comply, they have to fine and they need to comply.
Yes, fine and
they comply unless they win on appeal.
All right. What else?
I couldn't see what Google was actually going to do. What were the changes? Because this is so.
Google didn't tell anybody. Google just sent it to them and then.
Oh, I see them. Okay, okay. Because it's still Google Shopping is not at the core of the world, and Google has plenty of competition from Amazon.
Yeah. Well, if I were Google, I'd say, okay, we'll shut it down. How about that?
Exactly. Right. Fine.
We'll shut it down. Eight of Trump's 32, I think, cybersecurity advisors resigned, saying, you're not doing anything. Insufficient attention to threats.
President they were the Donald Trump and his administration.
Stop talking. Thank you. Trump's cyber.
When is that Chrome thing coming out, by the way?
I know the thing for this, the video. And then look what happens. The video then pops up on the right. And by the way, I have ad blockers.
More and more irritating.
Yeah, it's really, this is fortune. The moral infrastructure of our nation reads the letters of the people quitting. There's 7 members resigned from the 27-member council. The moral infrastructure of our nation is the foundation on which our physical infrastructure is built. The administration's actions undermine that foundation. The administration is not adequately attentive. This is more of more concern to me. Not adequately attentive to the pressing national security matters within our purview or responsive to sound advice received from experts and advisors.
Including election systems.
Yeah.
I can
the
see.
People who quit included former U.S. Chief Data Science DJ Patil, former Office of Science and Technology Policy Chief of Staff Kristen Dorgello. There's still 20 people on the council, so I don't know if the council's work will continue or if they'll just dissolve it as they did the other councils, advisory councils.
Have undermined the, quote, moral infrastructure of
the United
States.
Where is this coming
States.
From? Stop
That's
it. Stop it. I'm not talking to you, Fortune. What are we going to do? How can we as a nation end the great urban carnage of auto roll video and audio? How can we end that?
Google could make it. I mean, your browsers should just not make it
Google
happen.
Says they're going to add a capability in the next version of Chrome to force silence. you have to do it after the fact. I don't know.
If Google says, hey, autoplay video is going to impact your search. Oh, sorry. Shut up. then people would.
It's the new podcast stop. Style. You just shut up at everything that's talking at you.
Sorry.
You're talking to me, Stacey? Was that directed at me, Stacey?
Shut up.
Normally the home is not in here. How do I mute this again? There it is.
Press that. The thing on
that. It just told me that it was. That's awful. I muted. It's like the mic is muted.
I'm now muted.
By the way, power went out. Google Home is actually one of the nicer ones. I had to unplug all the echoes because we were going to bed. And when the power comes back on.
It came back, yeah.
Yes. But the Google Home doesn't actually, when it loses power and comes back on, I don't think it talks to you.
No, it doesn't talk, but it does a little.
It just speaks very silently.
It says, would you like me to fold your sheets and towels?
Crinkle, crinkle. Yes, the echo, and then if you have, you know, connected light bulbs, they will pop right back on. Boop, I'm here. So, all very exciting.
I don't know what to think of this article on Medium by Alexander Muse.
Yeah, I couldn't figure it out either, because it was so speculative.
How the NSA identified Satoshi Nakamoto, the creator or creators.
We've been here before, haven't we?
Yes, many, many times of Bitcoin. Apparently, the Department of Homeland Security knows who Satoshi is. They won't confirm that they know his identity. But despite these efforts, according to my sources at the DHS, Satoshi Nakamoto gave investigators the only tool they needed to find him, his own words. They used something called stylometry, where you compare texts to determine the authorship of a particular work. You know, I just heard a fascinating interview with the FBI profiler who helped find Ted Kaczynski, the Unabomber, using the same technique. Mm-hmm. And he talks about it. And this was on the occasion of one of the networks has released a miniseries on this, the Unabomber.
Has already or is coming up?
It's coming up. I haven't seen it. I don't know. Through the years, Satoshi wrote thousands of posts and emails, which are publicly available. According to my source, the NSA was able to use the writer invariant method of stylometry, to compare Satoshi's known writings with trillions of writing samples. Blah, blah, blah. They put it in a 50-dimensional space. They flattened them into a plane. And now they got a fingerprint. Maybe it's made up. It might be as made up as the other article I read, which I don't know what to think of, which says that Google was founded by the CIA in effect as a way to control, I don't know, something.
Oh my God, I know Alexander. I know this guy.
The guy who wrote the Satoshi thing?
Yeah. I was wondering. I was like,
Is he reliable? He's an entrepreneur writing about whatever interests me, he says.
Yeah, he's definitely not following journalistic ethics. He's also a bit of a not quite like a troll provocateur, but okay. He definitely is.
All right, but this isn't really that provoking. I mean,
provocative.
I'll tell you something that is more provocative, and this guy is an investigative journalist, Nafiz Ahmed, who wrote "How the CIA Made Google." Inside the secret network behind mass surveillance, endless war, and Skynet. Okay, that's a way to get. Now, this is 2 years old.
So it already is nationalized. It's already part of the government. See, no problem, Guardian.
This is 2 years old, and I apologize for bringing it up, but I've been getting a lot of people asking me about it, so it must have somehow come up, I didn't see a lot of evidence, you know, the convincing evidence. We know that the CIA has a venture capital fund and that they invested in Facebook, at least, if not Google. I don't know. It's a story. There's a story.
So this guy actually did talk to somebody at the DHS, perhaps, but he's writing, sorry, I'm going through his feed. Yeah. He's writing about license plate monitoring, which the EEF actually, it's a big deal in Texas. So they talked about that.
What does that have to do with Satoshi Nakamoto?
Because he says, after he wrote that story, while I was writing my post on how the NSA identified Satoshi Nakamoto, my source at the DHS described how the NSA subscribes to these private sources of license plate data to determine where you've been and where you are going. So, but we kind of knew that was happening already, or at least people who follow surveillance.
Everybody knows everything about me. I don't care. I give up.
You should
hear. I'm Satoshi Nakamoto, okay? There, I feel much better.
Okay.
That would be perfect.
Wouldn't that be funny? But anybody looking at me knows, no, you don't have the brains to do that.
No, Stacy, I'd believe a lot sooner than you. No offense there.
Sonos is apparently submitted to the FCC for approval. The thing you've all been waiting for, Stacy.
What's unclear, I don't want to have to buy a new microphone or a new speaker because I have a lot of speakers.
That's the big problem. People who have, Sonos.
If I can talk to the Echo, then I can tell the Echo and then it'll control my speakers.
At worst, sell me a little plug-in device that will voice enable my existing Sonos, because I've spent, as probably Stacy has, thousands of dollars on Sonos equipment over the years.
So that's what I'm hoping for. If they make me buy a new speaker, that's a deal killer and I'm going to be very enraged. Enraged.
Well,
like Jeff.
That's what this FCC filing is for, a product model S13 that adds integrated voice control functionality.
Yes, but that doesn't mean they can't do it on their old stuff.
Right.
This is just in putting the Echo into.
This is the other shoe that drops, because a week ago Sonos asked for new permissions. They said you must update your software and give us new privacy permissions, or you won't be able to update in future, and your Sonos speaker will eventually stop working, upsetting some people. I don't know. I know. I want an Echo-enabled Sonos. Is that so hard? Is that so very hard?
You could make it with SmartThings.
I actually plugged my Dot into my Sonos speaker via the aux jack, and it kind of works. Mm-hmm. You have to every once in a while.
Mine got a lot of feedback.
Oh. Well, move it farther away.
I did that a while back when the Dot came out, and I was dissatisfied with how that worked.
It doesn't.
Multi-room audio is not supported.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't even support stereo speakers. It's one Dot per speaker. But at least it's a use.
It is a use.
What else? We can wrap this up. We got a lot of good stuff.
Oh, good. Because I just got a Google alert with a recipe for potato salad, and now I'm hungry.
Do you like German style or picnic style Americana?
I like both.
I love German
I will
potato
eat a potato
salad.
No matter how it's dressed.
That's basically it. Potatoes are good food.
Potatoes are delicious.
Are potatoes and better than wheat?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I think so, too.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of carbs, but, you know, you got your vitamin A, vitamin C in there. A little B6. It's good for you. It's good for
delicious.
You.
Delicious. And I have bacon fat, which means my potatoes would be even better.
Oh, boy. What?
Did you watch the Hyperloop video?
Yeah. You want to watch it again?
Yeah. Yeah, sure. Let's watch it.
Mark Watney. Potatoes. Oh, I get it. For some reason, John
Mark
came
Watney,
over
yes.
when he started talking about potato salad and pointing at his knee. And I thought, what's that all about? And he says, Mark Watney from The Martian. Potatoes. Remember, he saved himself by living on potatoes. Yeah. Not salad, just potatoes. Part of the reason we're talking about this is I had, we won't be able to air it, unfortunately, until November, a great conversation this morning on Triangulation with the author of The Martian, Andy Weir. And
his
new novel comes out.
You can't air it until his new novel comes out. Oh.
November 14th. But I've read it. It's good. Artemis. It's very good. And it was a great interview. Andy was so fun and accommodating.
He released a big preview of it.
I know. Do we have to hold it?
You don't like that.
We have to hold it. We've been told by Random House.
If you agree to hold it, you got to hold it.
I asked him.
Leo
if
Leo hates that. Leo's awful.
Holding. I don't. But that's why I don't do pre-release anything. I don't. Which is why, by the way, I still don't have an Essential phone or a Galaxy Note 8. I'm watching all these YouTubers show their reviews of the Galaxy Note 8, talking about the Essential phone. I haven't received mine. I haven't even received a shipping date, even though I pre-ordered it and gave them money. Essential gave them almost $1,000. August 16th, nothing.
Did you get fished?
No, I didn't get fished.
Part of the Essential phishing scam?
Yeah.
Okay, well, that's a bonus.
I don't think that came from Essential. I think somehow we still don't know. And Essential says, yeah, we're working on this. See, I don't know if I agree with this Verge headline. In colossal screw-up, Essential shared customers' driver's licenses over email. I don't think that's what happened. I think what happened is somebody got some email addresses and sent a phishing scam to people saying, if you want your Essential phone, you need to send us ID so that we know it's you. And people responded, but everybody was CC'd. I don't think it really came from Essential. But now, people on Reddit say, no, it's a misconfiguration. I don't know. I guess I'll have to read that article because Essential says we're on it. I have not received an email from Essential saying you need to prove that you bought, that it's you. And I wouldn't respond. I'd say, no, I want my money back. I'm not emailing you my driver's license, you nitwits.
Yeah.
And you got my credit card and took the money. Exactly. What more do you need? Everybody else will give me stuff, even much more expensive stuff, to the address on my credit card, since that's where the money came from.
Yeah, Leo, if you want to give me your credit card, I'll send you all kinds of expensive stuff.
You see? You see what I'm saying? You don't need my driver's license to rip me off. Oh, never mind.
Yeah, I don't.
So I'm unclear. Dieter Bohn, though, knows what he's talking about. Let's see. This is from noon, 12:30 Eastern. No, this is from this morning. So I've been reading a lot of this stuff on Reddit, and Reddit is notorious for getting stuff wrong. So I'm not going to a guy named Schnell, Professor Ron Schnell, who was the CTO of Rand Paul's presidential campaign. There you go. Says it's not a phishing scam, it's a misconfiguration. The DKID's checkout and the replies are actually going to Essential, and then many other people have accumulated quite a collection of DLs, driver's licenses, passports, credit card statements, phone numbers, and email addresses. This is unbelievable. That's because it's a kind of everybody's CC'd, it's a reply all. So what appears to have happened, according to Dieter, who knows what he's talking about, is that Essential had a list of customers it needed to verify to prevent fraud. I'm apparently not on that list. So it sent them an email requesting more information, but that email address was set up as a group email, which meant replies sent to it went to everybody on the list. It was a misconfigured customer support address on Zendesk. Overnight, customers' inboxes were filled up with emails containing pictures of people and their driver's licenses. Oh, I want my money back. If Essential merely says we've taken steps to mitigate, we've and we'll update with more info soon. So far, no other information. So maybe Essential did screw up. That is pretty bad. They tweeted 5 days ago that they were starting to ship out phones. I don't know anybody who's got one, except for people like Marcus Brownlee and, you know, famous people. I don't care anymore. I got my Note 8. I got my iPhone Pro. I got my Pixel XL 2. No, I don't have any of those, but I'm gonna. I don't really need an Essential phone.
No, is not essential.
It's inessential.
Inessential.
I wonder if I get my money back.
Was it to reserve it?
No, it paid. I bought it. They didn't ask for money to reserve, but then they said, hey, congratulations. You know, send us your money. That was 2 weeks ago.
If it hasn't been delivered, it's possible you could even, if they don't give you your money back, you could take it up with your credit card provider.
I know. The only reason we even mention this is because it's Andy Rubin's company. He is the creator of Android, bought by Google and worked at Google in robotics before he left to create Essential. And it's also relevant to you, Stacey, because he's going to make a home automation device.
Maybe. Mm-hmm. Yes. He talks about his whole idea. He did a great article with Bloomberg or an interview with Bloomberg where he talks about his idea here is to get us to stop looking at our phones. And so one of the key elements of that would have to be some sort of contextual awareness in from a home kind of device. So it makes a lot of sense. I can't wait to see it.
So there is a new Zuckerberg.
August.
Priscilla Chan, Mark Zuckerberg Priscilla did the work. Mark was present at the beginning. Have given birth to a second daughter, August Zuckerberg, and Mark's letter.
Augie, we think.
Augie and Max. It's kind of cute.
That is so hipster.
Rather than write about growing up, Mark writes, to a newborn baby on Facebook, we want to talk about childhood. The world can be a serious place.
Oh.
That's why it's important to make time to go outside and play. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. It's cute. It's really sweet. It's kind of a shame that he's doing this in public, but okay, fine. I guess he has to.
He has to. That's his job.
It's his job. He signed up for it, and so did August and Max and Priscilla.
It's kind of like mine is getting angry in public.
You know, they're going to be incredibly wealthy, but I don't think that makes up for the fact that they're going to have a effed up childhood. Don't you think? In the public eye.
They might not be in the public eye as much as
look at Gates' celebrity kids. Child. They were protected.
I don't even know his kid's name. Yeah.
Right. Jobs' kids were protected. Well, except for one.
Michael Dell's kids have been very protected. I mean,
to Steve Jobs' credit, they tried to live in a normal house in a normal neighborhood. I mean, they really tried to give those kids a normal life.
Yeah.
Mark Zuckerberg owns every house around him because they didn't really want anybody nearby. So they just bought the whole neighborhood. I don't know. Maybe he will. O'Malek writes, congratulations, Mark and Priscilla, and welcome to the world, baby August. See, Om is a sweetheart. I'm just some crabby old son of a gun.
Om can be crabby, too.
Can he? Please tell me he can.
Oh, yeah.
Lord, yes.
Oh, good.
Lord, yes.
Oh, good. Because the way you talk about him, I feel like he's a saint.
No, he is a wonderful man. He is a good person, but holy cow, he can be as grumpy as the next person. And grumpier.
So. Stacey Higginbotham does the IoT podcast. Please subscribe to it at IoTpodcast.com. Let's break the bank at Libsyn. Let's have a million downloads.
Stacey
on Twitter. What?
You want an exclusive?
Yeah.
This is going to come out tomorrow in my show, but I'll give it to you for Leo.
You're doing your show tomorrow, not today?
Well, we record it today. It comes out tomorrow, five in the morning.
Okay.
So no one's heard it yet. But we launched, a hotline for people who have IoT questions.
The Higginbotham Hotline.
It is the IoT podcast hotline. And sadly, we don't have a great number for it.
What's the number?
So the number, if you want it, and it's 512-623-7424, or you can go online at the show and you can call it. Or we have an Android app that we built for some apparent reason, and you can call it there.
Hi, Stacey.
Ta-da!
And Kevin.
That is not my thing, though. You do not get bobbed off with some crappy marketing thing. I would never do that to you.
They're not working very well.
My IoT doesn't hear me. I don't know why.
I say all the time.
I talk.
If you call me and crinkle paper, I will hunt you down.
Thank you, Stacey.
I will not be amused.
Jeff Jarvis, he is at the City University of New York. That's not soothing crinkling. He's blogging at BuzzMachine.com.
I saw a tweet this week that was very angry that someone has invented bubble wrap that doesn't pop.
Oh, that's criminal. That's antisocial.
It
that's
is,
mean.
Isn't it?
Just mean. Gosh, why would somebody do that?
I know.
Isn't it Sealed Air? Isn't that the name of the company that owns Bubble Wrap?
I don't see it would even work if it doesn't pop. How would it work? How would it cushion a fall?
It just...
Because it cushions it.
It flexes.
I'm suspicious.
Okay, no more digressions. We have to get through this show.
Poor Stacey wants to go home.
Because Stacey's hungry.
I need food. I need alcohol.
She wants potato salad.
We do this.
My Nest apparently thought I was no longer home, and so it went to eco mode. I had to turn it.
1:30 p.m. Pacific time. 4:30 Eastern. That'd be about 20:30 UTC. I think I could really do it. I'm telling you.
I would stop.
I am told children fall asleep to this show anyway. Already.
Oh, children fall asleep to my show, except when I get excited.
Yeah. That's why you can't go, you can't do that anymore.
I am a bad person.
Wakes up,
I
wakes
know.
Up children.
Sorry.
And you know,
sorry,
rule number Karsten. One, do not wake up sleeping children.
Or dogs.
Let sleeping children lie. If you can't watch live, you can always watch on demand. Go to twit.tv/twig. Download a show, audio or video, and subscribe in Overcaster, Pocket Caster, Anycast, any show, any kind of thing you like. Stitcher. There's plenty of Twit apps, too. Please subscribe and get every single episode because you don't want to miss Stacey and Jeff ever. Stacey, you will be gone next week.
Yes, I think
noted,
so.
Noted, we will find somebody not as good as you.
Yes.
Never.
I will be at Qualcomm. Y'all can, I'll have a great report, though, afterwards about 5G and all kinds of crazy stuff.
Oh, that's in San Diego, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you're going to
love
it.
Which is where CD is.
Beautiful weather. You're going to have such a good time.
I can't wait.
Thank you, Jeff. Thank you, Stacey. Thank you, everybody, for being here. We'll see you next time on This Week in Google.